Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. 3 hours of conversation radio on its way right now. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. For those of you who are new to the program, and for those of you who aren't, I mean, it works both ways. Right? Okay, I'm trying to be really responsible here, making sure that I got my Facebook update done. Bob is firing it up behind a smoking hot mic. Yeah, baby! Where do you want to go this evening? Let's see, let's save the giggle for last, okay? Because we got a surefire giggle. I mean, we got one of those. Oh, don't let me forget this one. We got a giggle of epic proportions, just to close it. In the business, it's called a kicker. We got a kicker. Oh, we got a kicker. Meanwhile, over in the for-profit media, it is, admittedly, it's a news story, yes, and it is being reported that no one was killed, but the world has apparently stopped. With the exception of what was first described as a plane crash and is now being described as a miraculous landing in the Hudson River. You know, I like those miracles that are accomplished by trained, professional pilots. I really, really do. Passenger, it seemed like it lasted an eternity. I can well imagine the truth of that, having been in a couple of car wrecks along the way through my existence. When everything starts going sideways, sometimes literally, it seems like time just stops. I mean, there's time for a 7-course meal before the ugliness happens. I guess that's what they mean by it seems your life passes before your eyes. But you know what? I mean, really. Nah, it wouldn't be worth wasting radio time on to get somebody on to explain this stuff. But I never cease to be amazed by the headlines at CNN. This is a headline. This is a featured piece of news on their website. I am not making this up, and I double-checked. I hit my reload button just to make sure I wasn't accidentally at The Onion. Banana hammers nail at 21 below zero. What? Yep, apparently at 21 below zero, you can drive a nail with a banana. With all due respect to John Cleese. Today we're going to study what happens if a man attacks you with a banana! There is news. Trust me, there is news. Ken Salazar, a former senator from Colorado, had his Interior Secretary confirmation hearing today. I fully expect him to be confirmed. And I ain't feeling real good about it. Now, he did make some nicey noises today about the fact that he wants to change the direction of the Department of Interior toward renewable and sustainable energy, and away from nasty old, dirty old, filthy old, rotten old fossil fuel coal, especially mountaintop removal coal. And that's inspiring. On the other hand, this is a guy who still believes in that clean technology. Out of respect for John Wathan, I never say the word that comes between clean and technology, because I never know. John might be tuning in some evening, and if he is, I don't need him, you know, running around the room screaming, "I hate that word!" And I do, too. So it's a matter of respect, especially in light of what he and so many others have done recently down in East Tennessee after the TVA sludge nightmare. And there's some news on that as well. I don't know if you caught this yesterday or not, but there was a decision that came rolling out of a federal district court in North Carolina. A federal judge there ordered the Tennessee Valley Authority, get this, to clean up four coal-fired power plants that he said were engulfing parts of North Carolina in air pollution, and that it was fouling the region's health, economy, and natural resources. I want me a federal judge just like that in West Virginia. Really? Well, actually, we've got a couple of good ones. It's not for want of good rulings on filthy coal by our local district court judges. We've had a good number of those. It's what happened when the thing went up on appeal to the Fourth Circuit. And unless I'm misremembering, I believe we share a circuit with North Carolina, so this judge's decision will likely go up to that same Fourth Circuit. And for many, many years, the Fourth United States Circuit Court of Appeals was the place where progress went to die. Oh, this was a nasty bunch. Just a vile, filthy little right-wing conservative, the POS court. I mean, this is a court that once ruled that it was legal to strap a human being to a chair and draw blood from him against his will. And never mind that nasty little Fifth Amendment thingy. Or the Fourth, for that matter. But anyway, this is quite the interesting decision from U.S. District Judge Lacey Thornburg. And Judge Thornburg ordered the Tennessee Valley Authority to meet specific time limits for pollution reduction at the plants which are closest to the state. That's right. The state of North Carolina, a federal district judge in the state of North Carolina, ruled and took jurisdiction over, and that's kind of a big thing, really, took jurisdiction over coal-fired power plants that weren't in his district. That's a real wow. Three of the plants are in East Tennessee, and one of them is in Alabama. And of those four plants, two of them are responsible for recent spills into local waterways. The one in Alabama is the Widows Creek steam plant, which recently dumped had a humongous dump into Widows Creek, which, of course, ties into the Tennessee River. And then there is the Kingston plant that dumped almost 1.1 billion gallons of arsenic and manganese and thallium and barium-laced coal fly ash into the Emory River, the Clinch River, and ultimately the Tennessee River. But Judge Thornburg said, hey, TVA's generation of power at low cost to the consuming public has a high social utility. He says the vast, Lacey Thornburg, I'm assuming that's a female, but maybe not. Can't make those kind of assumptions anymore. Also, the order says the vast extent of the harms caused in North Carolina by the secondary pollutants emitted by these plants outweighs any utility that may exist from leaving their pollution untreated. You know what? We may be turning a corner. Because it was a federal district court in North Carolina that held some years back
that secondhand smoke was a bunch of BS science, in actual non-science. But now, undeniably, there is a ruling that acknowledges that there are secondary effects, secondary pollutants that come with burning filthy coal, a great deal of which comes from mountain range removal operations, mountain removal operations, and that those secondary effects and the poisons and the problems that they unleash on an unwitting population outweigh, get this, this is a quote, harms, the vast extent of the harms caused in North Carolina by the secondary pollutants emitted by these plants outweighs any, not some, not a few, outweighs any utility that may exist from leaving their pollution untreated. John Moulton is a spokesman for the Tennessee Valley Authority. And he said, TVA is disappointed by the court's decision. We're continuing to analyze it. In the meantime, TVA is committed to continue its work to improve the region's air quality. Remember, there's music between the notes as well as on the notes themselves. Yeah, TVA is working to improve air quality. Water quality? Not so much. So, basically, the Tennessee Valley Authority presented a sufficiency of evidence that untreated air pollution from those three power plants in eastern Tennessee and at the Widows Creek power plant in Alabama. Pay attention like you're not. But this is important. Unreasonably interferes with the rights of North Carolina citizens. And the order is mandatory. The question remains whether it will get appealed up to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. You know, we have here in West Virginia, we have decisions pending at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond that deal with the issue of mountain removal. And that decision could literally come down any day. And if by chance it comes down the right way, in other words, as the law intends, and as it should be, there's a very strong chance that mountain removal will have to end. Will have to end. With regard to, this is again a CNN story that I'm looking at, and the text of the story says that with regard to the dump, the dam breach at the Kingston power plant, a billion gallons of the sludge made up of water and fly ash from a coal-burning TVA steam plant swamped 300 acres of mostly private property when a dike on a retention pond collapsed. So they don't call it a sludge pond or a sludge dam, because that's what they are. But, you know, when you're in the for-profit-only media biz, you don't use language like that. Preliminary results from water samples taken in the spill area show no unsafe levels of toxins, said Leslie Sims, on-scene coordinator for the Environmental Protection Agency. Huh? Is this like TVA, who tested the water upstream from the spill downstream and then said the water was all right? Also said the testing includes multiple municipal water supplies and private wells. However, samples of the fly ash scooped up along roadsides and riverbanks show elevated levels of arsenic that normally would trigger an EPA response. The EPA, however, is not responding because the TVA is taking action to fix the problem. You know, it's just one last chance to screw up and do nothing on the part of the Bush administration. Because, you know, of course, the TVA has to respond to a presidential administration. It's a government agency. And the EPA is an executive branch administrative authority. But George W. Nero's administration isn't interested in doing anything about it. Astonishing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So that's a piece of good news. And it presents a real novelty in terms of how one approaches litigating against these monstrous coal companies and the power plants that burn their garbage. This particularly interests me because one wonders what would happen if, say, Pennsylvania sued power plants in West Virginia. Because we have a number of dirty, dirty old coal-fired power plants. Well, I know what would happen here. The coal mob would buy ads. And you wouldn't be able to turn the television on in West Virginia without seeing an ad with some computer-generated maggot or the mayfly or something saying, Pennsylvania's trying to shut West Virginia down and make you live in the dark. Shucks, yes. But this might represent a very interesting new tactic in the war on coal. Because coal's got a war going on us. But, yeah, the confirmation hearings for Ken Salazar, Interior Secretary designee, took place today. And he did say that he was interested in renewable energy. And if that's the case, he needs to be walked step by step through the most brilliant grassroots energy proposal going right now in the entire United States, and that is the Coal River Wind Project. Can't put windmills on a blown-up mountain. You can only put them on an intact mountain. And if he's serious about renewals, he needs to take affirmative steps to make sure it's possible for the Coal River Wind Project to happen. So that's a starting place. Very good starting place. But there's another news story that I think you would be interested in. There was a federal court hearing in Charleston, West Virginia recently. And that federal court hearing had to do with a plea bargain. Now, we all know what a plea bargain is. It is a means whereby a prosecutor strikes a deal with a criminal defendant in order, at least theoretically, to reach a just conclusion in advance of trial. Well, at a hearing on a plea bargain with Massey Energy that happened yesterday, Wednesday, the 14th of January. Widows of two Massey Energy coal miners, real coal miners, underground miners, not these demolition equipment operators who drive around on the tops of the moonscapes they've blasted into oblivion on mountain removal jobs. Real coal miners who were really killed in the Aracoma mine fire in 2006 January 2006, not too long after the Sago disaster. Dolores Bragg and Freda Hatfield, the widows of the two miners killed, stood before U.S. District Judge John Copenhaver and implored him, this is interesting, at least to me, implored him to reject the plea bargain that the prosecutor in the case, a U.S. District Attorney, for the Southern District of West Virginia, had struck with Massey. They want the plea bargain rejected, you see, because the plea bargain is nothing but a sweetheart kiss on the, big old wet kiss on the mouth from the U.S. District, District Attorney's Office for the Southern District of West Virginia to Don Blankenship and Massey Energy. I mean, it, this plea bargain is literally, no, I don't want to go there. I'm sick of that metaphor. But let's say, there are knee pads involved. Bless their hearts, Dolores Bragg and Freda Hatfield had the guts to stand up and tell U.S. District Judge John T. Copenhaver, if Massey executives have done nothing wrong and bear no criminal responsibility for the fire that killed Don and Elvis, then why do they need this deal? If they're innocent, they don't. Now, when you see a courtroom situation like this, how the two opposing lawyers behave says a lot. Aracoma Cole was represented by a guy named Robert Luskin, who must not have any mirrors in his house, so he doesn't have to look at himself when he shaves, because he represents Aracoma Cole. Assistant U.S. Attorney Hunter Smith was there on behalf of the people of the United States, and they were both advocating the little sweetheart wet kiss plea deal that would give the executives of Massey Energy a pass for the willful, wanton, reckless, egregious violations of safety regulations that led to the deaths of Dolores Bragg's and Freda Hatfield's husbands, Don and Elvis. And this was really a sweetheart deal. Because, you see, Massey Energy got busted, I mean busted, a while back for a host of safety violations that in many of their mines that would have cost them billions, literally billions. It was pled out for $20 million, literally 2 cents on the dollar, I think, by the time, maybe 20 cents on the dollar by the time you do the reduction and the math and all the stuff that I'm no good at. And so when Mrs. Bragg and Mrs. Hatfield stood up to beg U.S. District Judge John T. Copenhaver to reject this sweetheart deal, Robert Luskin and Hunter Smith were both as silent as graven images, because they too have worked together to do one thing, and that is to make sure that none of the suits at Massey Energy ever see the inside of a jail. Hunter Smith, the U.S. District Attorney, representing you, me, we, the people of the United States of America, doesn't want Don Blankenship to see the inside of a jail cell. And Robert Luskin, representing Aracoma Cole, doesn't either. It's the one thing that Messrs. Smith and Luskin can agree on. What happened? Maybe you're new enough to the program, you don't remember the coverage of Sago and Aracoma. There was a fire at the Aracoma mine, and as the it took place on January 19th, 2006, the Aracoma Alma No. 1 mine in Logan County, West Virginia. And there's nothing more horrifying than a mine fire. Thick, billowing clouds of black smoke filled the mine, plunging men who were working in darkness to begin with into something, if it's possible to imagine it, even darker. The miners tried to scramble and evacuate the mine, and Bragg and Hatfield were part of a crew that ran into that smoke, and they tried to find another way out. In the smoke, Bragg and Hatfield were separated from the group, and in the maze that is an underground mine, and in the pitch black darkness and smoke, they got lost, and they choked to death on the smoke. Why did this happen? Well, Massey Energy has a slogan. If you drive by one of their offices, on a sign you'll see the phrase, "Work like you mean it." Work like you mean it. Because if you don't work like you mean it, Massey will, as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you a bellyache, fire you like Massey means it. They'll also blacklist you. Now, bear in mind, blacklisting's illegal, but this is Massey and it's West Virginia. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown and they do it anyway. So, Bragg and Hatfield were killed. They didn't die. They were killed. Because Massey's Aracoma operation had taken out two ventilation walls whose purpose was to isolate the main escape tunnel from wherever the fire was. Yeah. And that was done as a result of company pressure. Memoranda written, authored by Don Blankenship were discovered a couple of years ago, in which he told the workers, the miners, that safety was not the number one priority of Massey. That worker safety was not, I repeat, the first priority of Massey Energy. That the production of coal is the number one priority of Massey Energy. Whew. So anyway, Luskin and Hunter Smith got together and looked longingly into each other's eyes, and they cut a deal. And the deal is that Aracoma Coal would pay $2.5 million in criminal fines and that Aracoma Cole would plead guilty to 10 criminal charges that include a felony, that felony involving the fact that Aracoma Cole falsified, in other words, dummied up, frauded up, faked up, ginned up, and rubed up, the evacuation drill record book. Because you're supposed to keep records on these things because coal mining's a dangerous business. The ghosts of Eccles or Monongah and any of a number of other disasters in this state. The ghosts of coal in their legion can testify to that. But they dummied up the drill record book. In other words, Aracoma Cole said that it had had safety record or safety or emergency drills when it just hadn't.
Work like you mean it.
The primary misdemeanor, as I said, involved removing two ventilation walls that were supposed to keep the primary escape tunnel free from fire sources. Aracoma agreed with the prosecutors that that was the cause of Bragg's and sickening to talk about, of Bragg's and Hatfield's deaths. On top of that, Aracoma says it'll pay $1.7 million in civil fines to settle safety citations that came out of MSHA, the United States Mine Safety and Health Administration. Those violations relate to the deaths as well as to literally hundreds of other problems that MSHA inspectors found after the murders at the mine took place. Yeah, I said murders. Got a problem with that? No, I didn't think so. I mean, maybe we could call it manslaughter. Or, did you ever notice where Massey's concerned? Man's laughter. Manslaughter, man's laughter, same thing. Actually, it's more on the laughter side of things where a filthy, sleazy operation like Massey is concerned. So that's the plea deal. And it's a criminal charge. Something like 9 misdemeanors and 1 felony. There's only one problem, and that's this. It's insufficient. Because what Hunter Smith, the U.S. attorney, acceded to, gave in to, put his knee pads on for, was an agreement in the plea bargain whereby the people of the United States of America, you and me and the rest of us, promised, cross our hearts, that we wouldn't go after those poor little executives at Massey Energy or any of its officers or agents. Hunter Smith and Robert Luskin also put into the agreement that the government, quote, does not have evidence suggesting that Massey knew, approved, or acquiesced in Aracoma's failure to maintain true and accurate records of escapeway drills. Work like you mean it. The number one job of Massey Energy is not worker safety. It is the production of coal. Now, on the other hand, the federal government in this case did not give up the right to go after low-level Aracoma employees. In other words, they traded the ability to go after the real criminals for the ability to go after a patsy or two. It's kind of like Abu Ghraib when you get right down to it that way, isn't it? We know now that the orders to torture and demean and dehumanize people in Iraq and at Guantanamo literally came all the way from the top, from a little satanic bastard named Donald Rumsfeld, who got public, who got prosecuted? Ignorant hillbilly girl named Lindy England, and some fella named Charles Grainer. This is that. From the Charleston Gazette story, prosecutors did not give up the right to bring more charges against lower-level Arakoma mine managers or foremen, and have said that such charges are likely to come. Hang your butt over the road, boys! You're going for a ride! Disgusted yet? Who do you stand with? That just out of curiosity. Mrs. Bragg and Mrs. Hatfield? Or the twins, Luskin and Smith? Mrs. Bragg pointed to that go after the patsies part of the deal. She said in open court, quote, "It may very well be that the laws that govern coal mine safety and coal mine management make it possible for coal executives to hide in legal nooks and crannies, while a foreman must bear the full brunt of the law. If that is the case, then shame on the Congress of the United States for letting it be so. And if that is true, that it is easier to put an executive in jail for causing pollution to a stream or to the air than it is for causing the death of a coal miner, then shame on all of us for letting it be so." And Judge Copenhaver said he wants more information. Let us hope that that man does justice. Try these bastards. Put them on trial. Let 12 West Virginians tried and true sit in the jury box and hear the information. Let Don Blankenship stand in the dock. As these ladies said, if he's innocent, if he is actually not guilty. He doesn't even have to be innocent in this country, just not guilty. And there's a big difference. If he's not guilty, you've got nothing to fear. Will it happen? I don't know. So we wait and we see. And the blood of Mr. Bragg and Mr. Hatfield cries out from a dark and smoky section of hell, simply put. So that's our starting place for the evening. What can you do? Well, what I would suggest that we do is that we implore people. Now, bear in mind when I'm talking, you can write letters to Judge Copenhaver. He's not too hard to find. He is the senior most judge in the Southern District of West Virginia, John T. Copenhaver, Jr. You can write him. I don't know that you can email him, but you can write him. And you can beg him to reject this plea deal, to reject this sweetheart deal. You can beg him to let justice be done. And by justice, I certainly don't mean this miscarriage that is being pawned off on the court and on the people of West Virginia and the nation, and most importantly on Mrs. Hatfield and Mrs. Bragg, by Lawyer Smith and Lawyer Luskin. You can do that. You can also suggest that bear in mind, Hunter Smith is an assistant U.S. District Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, and he works for a Bush appointee, a loyal Bushy, as it were. You can make the argument that this close to the change in administration, the incoming Attorney General should have a chance to look at this matter before the U.S. District Attorney's Office for the Southern District of West Virginia is allowed to go any further. That Attorney General, of course, is none other, that nominee is none other than Eric Holder. And to be quite truthful, he said some inspiring things today. He had his confirmation hearing, and he was asked about torture. And I think it is worthwhile to hear what he had to say.
Well, waterboarding has been recognized to be torture since the time of the Spanish Inquisition. The United States had prosecuted American soldiers for using this technique early in the last century. They prosecuted Japanese soldiers for using it on Americans in World War II. But the two most recent nominees to serve as Attorney General of the United States hedged on the question of waterboarding. They would not say that if an American were waterboarded by some other government,
this is Senator Patrick Leahy,
in the world, whether it be torture and illegal. They maintain they depend upon the circumstances. Do you agree with me that waterboarding is torture and illegal?
If you look at the history of the use of that technique, used by the Khmer Rouge, used in the Inquisition, used by the Japanese and prosecuted by us as war crimes. We prosecuted our own soldiers for using it in Vietnam. I agree with you, Mr. Chairman, waterboarding is torture.
Do you believe that other world leaders would have the authority to
I'm so unaccustomed to this. Waterboarding is torture. Where's all the, but we're got to waterboard them here, so there, so we don't have to waterboard them here, and they hate your freedom, and got to do whatever it takes to keep the American people safe. And where's all that stupidity? I've got 8 years of torture, yeah. 8 years of desensitization to actual plain English. Waterboarding is torture. That's Eric Holder. That's the man that President-elect Barack Obama has nominated to be the Attorney General of the United States, and about whom I have raised questions. For you see, Eric Holder cut exactly the same kind of deal with Chiquita Brands as Arecoma coal lawyer Robert Luskin cut for his client. We'll pay any amount of money. We'll pay a lot of money. As long as the people actually responsible for this never have to see the inside of so much as a club fed. Only in the case of the deal that Eric Holder cut, it was a deal for about $20 million, if I recall correctly, and it involved his clients having hired out the murder of about, 200-plus labor organizers in the killing banana fields of Colombia. But I got to tell you, I'm refreshed to hear those words, waterboarding is torture. Because toward the end of the program last night, I mentioned that for the first time, a Bush administration official has said that we tortured an individual in our care, custody, and control, and said it on the record, and did not retract it. Bob Woodward got the quote. So I think it would be fair. It would at least be fair for Judge Copenhaver to reject this plea and make the deal go back up the chain of command from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of West Virginia to the Attorney General's Office, and let Eric Holder determine whether or not two dead minors and their two living widows are entitled to see justice done and everyone responsible for the deaths held accountable for them. What do you think? It only seems fair to me. So I'm going to make sure that I get a letter off, because sometimes there's not a lot you can do, but there's something you can do. And doing something is always more valuable than doing nothing. We'll come back to your phone calls if you so desire at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Somebody who can do the job for free. When you need a bit of love, 'cause your man is out of town, that's the time you get me running, and you know I'll be around.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh yeah. I don't want
your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh yeah. Light the candle, put the lock upon the door. You have sent the maid home early, like a thousand times before.
Wow, what'll he do next? A real break with bumpers and everything. I just wanted to see if I could still do it. Welcome back. Let's go straight to the phones. Susan, bless her heart, has been holding on and holding on, and I appreciate the patience. Hey, Susan.
Hi there.
How are you?
Well, I'm a whole lot madder than I was.
What have I done now?
Oh, not at you.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
No, just, well, among other things, I'm a large part of me is Scott, so... has anybody considered suggesting to those two widows that they contact the Southern Poverty Law Center?
I didn't see any mention of it in the story, although I got to admit that statement read like it was written by, it was written kind of lawyerly, frankly.
Because when the legal system broke down in Mississippi as regards to the Klan, after a woman's son was taken out and lynched, she couldn't get any justice. So she went to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And they beggared the Klan. They broke it. They hauled him into civil court and beggared them.
Now, that's one of the things. Judge Copenhaver did demand to be told the terms and said he would disclose the terms of the settlement that has already been entered because they were all hauled into the dock and Massey had to do a civil settlement, but nobody knows what Massey paid.
Yeah, well, if I were, I would have those women go after, you know, not only contact the Obama campaign, but also, like you said, hold her office, but also have those women contact and also spread it around that the Southern Poverty Law Center, they exist for things like that. Like there was, they went after the order here in the Pacific Northwest the exact same way they did after the Klan, and they broke them too.
Hmm.
Because it's really hard to run an organization when you can't buy underwear, let alone anything else.
Well, that's that.
You know,
here, here.
It's really hard to conduct a hate group when you can't even buy them, you know, collect the money for your sheet.
That's true.
Yeah, and these people took to hold them into court, and they just they busted them.
Well,
the Southern Poverty Law Center walk off with a big cat in the canary grin, and and it's the same guy that did it both lawsuits. I don't know if he's still doing it, but I do know that's the one sure way to nail these people. Do it in a civil court. And do it for big time money. You won't. Hey, you can't bring your husband back. That's not possible. But what you can do is end up owning the stupid mine.
You know, I don't mean to naysay that, Susan, but you. It is hard to express exactly how vast an amount of money these outfits control.
Well, that's true. But then again, if you don't bet, you can't win.
Oh, that's without a doubt. Without a doubt.
On another subject.
Yes.
You know, that email I sent you earlier. No, I'm not that cynical about is to believe that the Israelis are going to be that innocent. However,
no, I didn't think you were cynical. I meant they're that cynical.
Yeah, they are. It appears that the U.S. is finally starting to feel the backlash.
How so?
Article from The Guardian. Actually, it's very new. U.S. suspends munitions delivery to Israel. The ship is on the high seas, but they have turned off their transponder, and they are no longer headed for Israel, and they are loaded with munitions that were originally headed for Israel.
Well, I hope they're not still, but could that possibly be, I don't have the article in front of me, but could that also have something to do with people wanting to make sure that nobody can track the vessel or know what it does in the dark and still of the night?
It says the Pentagon has suspended the delivery of a shipload of munitions to Israel after international concern that it could be used by Israeli forces in Gaza. It's currently in Greek waters with its transponder tracking turned off to prevent its location being identified. So they know it's in Greek waters.
Hmm. Well, I can hope, as
right,
we all can.
Oh, here's the kicker.
Because I really don't think Israel needs any more guns. The Gazans need some butter.
Yeah,
Israel doesn't need any
after
guns.
They blew up, after the Israelis blew up all that, after UN headquarters were blown up by the Israelis, here's the reason why they suspended shipments. And apparently, there is a movement to afoot to ensure that no European Union member state will allow their ports or other facilities to be used to transit these or any other weapons to any of the parties to this conflict. That's a quote from the it was written from one of the German diplomat.
Okay.
So apparently the European Union is moving, and they're doing what we should have been doing a long time ago.
And that I hope we, well, you know, I got to thinking about it the other night. And I'm simply, if there is a place on this planet where people are starving and dying, Susan, it is the place. It is more than the place that a country like the United States that claims to have been, that has so many people in it, that claims that it was founded on Christian principles.
Yeah.
It is more than the place of the United States to send food to starving people and to give of the largesse of the people of the United States to people for whom mere pennies worth of food is the difference between life and death. And if Israel were starving, I would be howling from the rooftops that we feed Israel. Any other starving place in the world, it is best
first
that
we gotta go. First, we gotta stop them from blowing the stuff up.
Well, and that's precisely my point. Israel isn't starving. Israel is profiting. Israel is dropping weapons that were built by Americans on people that well, you know, Palestinians, Iraqis, Afghanis. You know, they don't really matter. As long as somebody here has a job making them, and that is it, that's a calculus that I can't stand. But I tell you this: I was reflecting on this the other night, and as I approach my 46th birthday, I can't help noting that my grandfather went to his grave supporting a nation to whom he owed absolutely nothing. And he did it with his tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother went to her grave doing the same thing. My other grandmother went to her grave doing the same thing. My father and my mother went to their graves doing the same thing. At what point do we stop sending aid to a country that does not need it? Egypt has a problem feeding itself.
I don't know.
I think at some point we've got to ask that question.
Yeah, there is one thing I did want to bring up with you. Do you remember at the height of apartheid in South Africa? I don't know. I honestly had no idea what kind of a effect it had, but I know publicity-wise it was huge. It was a movement called divestment.
Yes, yes. In fact, there was a movement, and I remember Peter Godbold talking about this, a movement in the Methodist Church to divest of Israeli holdings. And that was decried as, but, oh, we can't do, how could the church do that?
Well, it's simple. You know, take a look at a picture of a Palestinian kid, 3-year-old who's been killed by white phosphorus, and that's no good reason.
Well, and let me just point something else out. Do you remember a few years back when a beautiful young American woman was bulldozed to death by the Israelis?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bulldozer they used was a Caterpillar made in the United States of America.
And the United States never did a damn thing.
And the United States never did a damn thing. And yet, were you here, and were I to take you up on a nearby mountain, or perhaps take you to Hell's Gate on Caford Mountain, you would see those same Caterpillar vehicles being used to destroy my home that were used to destroy Palestinian homes.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it is misplaced on my part, but I can feel a certain amount of identification with Palestinian peoples.
Oh yeah.
Because while the shells aren't landing on me, and I would never and mine, and I would never equate the two, I know what it is to have your windows rattled with an explosion.
Mhm. And I have the misfortune, or maybe it's a good thing. to have, first of all, an excellent imagination and a history of being part of a persecuted minority twice over, and a real good reading of history. And so when I hear the Israelis going on, yeah, I'm not hearing that. What I'm hearing is Kristallnacht.
Yeah, well, as I've pointed out before, what's the difference between Gaza
and
the Warsaw Ghetto? Not a dime's worth.
And to me, if you act like a Nazi, that makes you a Nazi. I'm sorry, Israel, you're acting like Nazis. The fact that 6 million of your people managed to be slaughtered during the 30s because of their religion doesn't give you an infinite pass. If you do evil, you are evil.
I see. Yes, I seem to have heard. Or if you would not be evil, you must stop doing evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not religion. That's just common sense.
Yeah, it is. It's you know what it is? I disagree with you, Susan. It's not common sense. It's called conscience.
It's called humanity.
What is the definition of a person without a conscience? I'll bet you a horn
psychotherapist.
There you go. I didn't even have to pick up the courtesy phone for horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner on that one.
No, that you didn't. Or a serial killer. If you put, you know, sociopaths in charge of a country, what do you get? Give you the answer. You get the United States and you get modern-day Israel. Golda Meir is rolling over in a grave.
You know, I've thought about that.
Because Golda Meir, she was a tough broad, but she was an honorable one.
What do you think Yitzhak Rabin's doing?
Oh, God.
History is writ, our human history is writ in blood, and we really need to find a new color.
Yeah, and I'm really tired of talking about Gaza. I really wish it's like that email I sent you about going back to that podcast from the day after the 2006 election, and here's this newscast. And guess what? Israel's invading Gaza.
Yeah, from November 2006.
Oh, God! I got thrown out of the chair!
Same poop, different day.
Yeah, I mean, it's just over and over, and I can remember when I was just out of high school, and here we go again, there's another war. Okay, admittedly, Israel didn't start that one. That one was the Yom Kippur War, but, you know, these people have been fighting for thousands and thousands of years. It's time to quit.
It was long past time. Long past.
Crop, fellas. Because all you are doing is breeding the next crop.
Yeah.
Of suicide bombers. Great. Great move.
Yeah. Smart. Not. Hey, Susan, great to hear from you, dear.
Love to you and Agnes, and you have a wonderful weekend.
It's not here yet.
Well, I know.
See, I've been running a day ahead all the whole time. And you're making it worse.
Hey, what can I say? I'm not all here half the time. Well, the reason I'm probably not going to be able to listen to you tomorrow is because I have a doctor's appointment.
Ah, darn it! Yeah, because it's just now passing 4 o'clock there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I wish you the best with your doctor's appointment, and I hope he gives you good news.
Well, does he? And I sincerely hope she does.
I do too, and I apologize for my gender bias.
Well, she will. She's a nice lady. I think she'll forgive you.
Just don't tattle, okay?
Oh yeah, I will.
I knew you would. Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's roll over, let's roll down to Australia. John Fox is with us.
Hey, mate, how are you?
Hey, what's up, John?
I have this just story that just gave me unending pleasure to hear. I don't know if you caught Maddow's show last night, but do you remember the window factory in Chicago?
Yeah, Republic.
Right. This has just turned into one of the best worker stories I've heard. Because of the publicity, they are now being bought by a green buildings manufacturer. The deal is almost completed, and the factory is going to be turned into a green products manufacturing site. Because, and I've got a, I sent you a link from Chicago Breaking News. They say the shuttered Chicago Windows factory that was the site of a six-day worker sit-in last month over severance pay is close to being purchased by a California company, union leaders said Wednesday. The deal would put those employees back to work. Under the deal, the building and assets of Republic Windows and Doors, which closed abruptly December 5th and declared bankruptcy on the 15th, would be purchased by Sirius Materials, a company based in Sunnyvale, California, that produces green building materials. Negotiations over the deal are in their final stages, and Mark Meinster, organizer of United Electrical Workers, the union representing the former Republic workers. The workers are hopeful, he said. There's certainly a risk that it won't happen, but people are very hopeful that they can start working again. And that would be a great ending to this whole story for a lot of people. The CEO of Sirius Materials confirmed that the deal was close, but that the decision currently rested with the bankruptcy judge's decision. Basically, the story comes down to is that these guys in California saw the story, saw a totally viable workforce, and a factory, and they want to do everything that they can to give every one of those people their jobs back.
That's delightful news. It really is, and we're in hard times. There's no doubt about it. The world is in hard times because we sneeze and the world gets the flu. But there's a difference. This is the kind of thing going forward that can mean something, whereas. The last 8 years of George Bush have just been a matter of, whistling past the graveyard? This is actually doing something about it.
When we were talking about the auto bailout, this is kind of where I was going. That, if we're going to bail out the big three, that their infrastructure should be turned over to greener manufacturers. And this is the same concept, but being done completely on the private level. And the union's in on it. I think it's just genius. The only thing is just that we should get rid of that day that Blagojevich showed up, like, I think the day before he got arrested, and grandstanded on the situation. But
Thing I love about Blagojevich, though, is anywhere he goes, his rug gets there first.
Oh, and how surreal for that guy. He just had to swear in, the state senate or whatever that's impeaching him.
That's got to feel a little creepy. Did you catch maybe on the inner tubes the Blagojevich impression from Saturday Night Live?
No, because bloody those NBC clips are blocked here in Australia.
Because it ran on
they must have a deal with cable.
See, that's one of those moments where that they're they never sleep and they're constantly trying to figure out ways to screw up the internet. Because it was a lovely piece, and the rug was so just nastily obvious. And he said, I'm going to use a word here. I'm going to use a word here that I told him, if you sex with me, I'll sex you up.
I love how he's being referred to as just Governor F word.
But maybe the whole of Illinois politics, Republican and Democrat, is all. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. But there's hope. There is hope when you see something like this going on. And John, frankly, I wish I had the bucks, because I can't think of anybody more than you who would absolutely just go wild to see what I'm going to see in a couple of weeks and be at that green Blue-Green Alliance meeting convention in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I'm green with jealousy, ha, ha, ha.
He'll be here all week trying to veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress. It's because, that's the kind of thing that these people are already talking about. And the idea that that labor is sitting down and talking to environmental groups, just, it's a little bit like what I was talking about the other night about, doesn't the air just smell a little fresher knowing that George Bush isn't going to be breathing it in Washington, D.C. very soon? You know what I mean? And when you see people coming together to form these kinds of alliances, doesn't it just, it's just a little lift in your shoes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, I was up pulling an all-nighter the other night because I had a PC problem, and the cause is the most odd thing I've ever come across. A bad USB extension stopped my PC from booting. But anyway,
extension or an extension cord?
A USB extension cable.
Oh, that's twisted.
It wouldn't even get past, it wouldn't even get to the memory check. It took me a little while to figure it out, but anyway. I sat up and I was sitting up and I was watching Hillary Clinton's hearings, which was much more of a celebrity pageant, which I did kind of find somewhat interesting. But as everyone's had their doubts about, about these appointments, but I said before, tone from the top means just heaps. And I listened to Hillary Clinton talking about, smart power and the fact that the State Department has basically been gutted from the inside for the past 8 years. They haven't been hiring. They haven't even had a budget officer for the past 8 years. They need to increase their hiring by 46% just so that they can do their job. All the top military officials are saying the State Department needs to play a heavier role, and we will give them some of our money to do it. And there's Holder coming out being sorrowful about the rich thing, and then coming out and being absolutely, no question about it, torture is illegal, it's a crime, it should be prosecuted. We've done it in history before, and he brought up the Khmer Rouge, and it's just like, I feel like there are rays of sunshine.
He brought through. You know what I thought was most important out of that quote, though, John? He brought up the Khmer Rouge. He brought up the Japanese, and then he said, "And we prosecuted our own when we did it in Vietnam."
Yes, yes, yes. And that other question that was thrown at him. But if, blah, 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 security, I can't remember exactly the wording, do you then have the right? And he says, no.
And it's such an easy answer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's a
no. If you've got a big pen, can you drive it through his eyeball and give him a lobotomy like Jack Bauer? No. Oh. But Jack Bauer's been our hero for 8 years. Don't care. Can't do it.
Tell you what, I used to like Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, shoot, yeah.
I am so surprised that he has continued to be involved with such a show.
Well, is he a right-wing ass? Or is he just getting a paycheck?
I don't know. I wish I could answer that question, what was it? Flatliners, one of my favorite.
Oh shoot! The vampire movie. Come on, kids, youngsters.
Of a vampire.
No, right? No. This was Lost Boys. Lost Boys.
Yeah, Lost Boys. Awesome film.
And
great entertainment.
And comes from a pretty darn good daddy, too. I mean, Donald Sutherland was no slouch in MASH.
No kidding.
But, you know, sometimes you just take the job. I mean, hell, you know, you've moved around a little bit in showbiz. Yeah. You play the club if they pay the fee.
Yeah. But, you know, I have also walked away from things when they involved, say, issues or opinions or threats of violence to people that I can't support. And I walked away and said, thank you, but no thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what, just backing up for a minute to the Republic Window story. The final paragraph of that Chicago breaking news thing. The union has filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board alleging that Republic Windows majority owner Richard Gilman didn't properly negotiate with the union before closing the plant and has moved equipment and business from the bankrupt company to a new company manufacturing windows in Iowa. See, this is one of those moments where you really want somebody who gives a rat's rear end about working people at the Department of Labor. And, you know, I guess we'll be too busy showing pictures of parades and marching bands and things like the people at the reviewing stand and podiums and people doing that Queen of England wave and people doing that light bulb screwing in wave and the Miss America wave and all that stuff. I want to see Elaine Chao leave the Department of Labor, never to return. Because that hateful woman has facilitated more abuse of more workers than anybody can count. It, you know, it was because of Elaine Chao that you couldn't get the national. There was a backlog. Wayne probably has this number just on the tip of his tongue, but there was a backlog of literally thousands of NLRB cases, and they just wouldn't try any of them on Elaine Chao's order.
So I forget the name of the appointee to that position for Obama. What's her name?
Hilda Solis, daughter of immigrant working people, labor advocate par excellence in the House of Representatives. She'll do a magnificent job, I think.
Yeah, and again, I think we're going to just continue to see this incremental return to what really are American values, I'm hoping. And I keep seeing little snippets of that. And, you know, I am actually more and more happy about the Clinton appointment, I have to say. Her star power is undeniable. When she goes overseas, she will get the attention. And I think it's a good thing. And I think that she will follow the administration's lead. And I think also, just kind of watching her during the hearings, you know, it had to have been a really sour pill for her to swallow the fact that, you know, she didn't get the nomination. You know, no one ever expected Barack Obama, you know, 2.5 years ago or whatever, to come blasting out of nowhere and just running with it. And I know that had to be really, really hard for her to come to terms with. But I'm getting the impression that this position, I think she's really settling into the idea of being Secretary of State.
With one caveat?
Yeah.
All this, because I don't know if you caught this, but John Kerry was part and parcel of this process. And he was in the hearing talking something about, and we have to worry about the grave and growing threat from Iran's nuclear weapons program. And Hillary said, oh, I agree.
Yeah. Because
there's this little problem that the National Intelligence Estimate pretty much makes it clear that Iran gave that up in 2003. That there's no evidence to suggest. Yeah.
But if we actually go in as she's describing with you know, this quote smart power, which I think is a brilliant twist on what we used to call soft power, then we won't be going there throwing ultimatums. We will go there in negotiation and maybe verifying that these reports are accurate, and get somewhere. And the fact that all tools are available, and the current Joint Chiefs guy said, look, the military is not the best option every time. And the military has been asked to do way too much.
The military has been asked to do things that it can't do.
Exactly. And the military, the top brass, are saying exactly that. Leave them to fighting and winning wars. But that shouldn't be the only thing we ever do. And return to the concept of dialogue.
Oh, and I got to share something with you. This just rolled in from our buddy Marty with regard to Eric Holder.
Yeah.
He said, talk is cheap. Anybody can talk. Don't we want action? Darn right we want action, you know?
He's
wow, how Valley Girl did I hear? You know? Like, we want some action, you know, and like a burrito or two and maybe a large size Pepsi.
But see, he set the stage for himself already in the hearings by being unequivocal. If he doesn't act, all that wonderful organization that was created during this last presidential campaign will come down full bore.
Well, this is really, these hearings, I don't know what they were like in the 18th, in the 19th century, okay? I don't know what they were like in the 30s or 40s of the 20th. But as long as I've been watching them, they've been turned into these things where nobody can really, really say what they mean, John. They have to give hints.
Yeah.
Do you believe torture's illegal? And the witness says, warmer. Warmer. Do you believe we should prosecute people who commit torture in the name of the United States? Oh, you're burning up. You're hot. You're hot. And you, and that's what kind of made what Holder said. And, you know, I'm one of the few people on our side of the debate who has even raised an issue about Holder. You know, the Republicans are out there just peeing down their own legs, hollering about Mark Rich and pardon this and pardon that. The pardon is the prerogative of the president. And even if the guy at the Justice Department says this is wrong, and Holder just took no position, if I understand correctly, even if the guy at Justice says this is wrong, it is still finally the president's prerogative, and he can do what he wants, because it's his constitutional right. So when Eric Holder says, oh, yeah, it's illegal, that's a level of refreshing non-hint game-playing, you know, bigger than a bread box, smaller than a camel, that we don't often see. And I'm hoping it's an indicator that there's some reality behind it. I mean, I can imagine, tell me if I'm wrong, John, I can imagine that after the years of confirmation kabuki theater, to have that said, I'd guess there's more than two or three skid marks in the drawers of more than two or three Bush administration officials.
Yeah, and
wow,
and
that was crass.
another thing that I found interesting, I saw an interview with Jim Webb in the last couple of days. And they talked about, and he was asked about, you know, Obama seeming to say that he's not gonna himself go after prosecutions, you know, straight away. You know, that whole, we gotta look forward and not back. But Webb made a really, really interesting comment. He said it's not the president's job to do that. That's Congress's job and the attorney general's job. So it's not up to Obama, if you follow me, to stand up and say, we're going to go after the Bush administration, blah, 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 blah. I'd love him to say that. But technically, it's not his job. It's Congress that goes and holds hearings.
Did I lose?
The Attorney General.
Okay.
No?
Yeah. Okay, you're there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's the Congress that will hold hearings. And they are planning to hold hearings on what went down the last 8 years. It's not necessarily have to be led by Obama.
And,
so if Obama's able to go and work on his agenda without poking at the Republicans over what happened in the past, and Congress does that.
It's right. And Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, the guy who replaced Lincoln Chafee. Sheldon Whitehouse said recently that he said, I understand if Barack Obama doesn't want to spend a lot of his administration's time looking backwards at the things that were done in the last 8 years. He said, but we have a different duty and a different obligation in Congress. That's Congress's job, and I will do it myself if I have to. That's some, you know, that's some Harry Truman kind of give 'em hell talk, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, buddy. Oh, yeah. And like I said, you know, we again, none of these people have had a chance to actually do anything yet. And talk is cheap. But I'm seeing straighter talk out of these people than I have heard in the past 8 years.
And while that's a narrow scale, John, I think it's a broad margin. We haven't heard anything like that in the last 8 years, and what we're hearing now is just wildly and radically different from anything we've had. And if anywhere, you know, if Hilda Solis will get behind the Employee Free Choice Act and go to the Senate perhaps and raise a ruckus for the Employee Free Choice Act, if Dr. Stephen Chu at the science advisor, if he'll follow up on the things that he said, and I think I heard you Sunday night mention his now famous quote that has the entire coal industry looking like they're trying to pass a peach pit, you know, coal is our national nightmare.
Nightmare.
if they will continue to do that, then I think it might give, because, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are not the people you go to looking for spine, especially not Harry.
Right.
But if the administration puts some weight behind them, just, it's okay. Stand up. Don't lock those knees, Harry. Then some stuff can happen. I really believe it can.
And there's a new push to try and unseat old Harry Reid in his next election, and I would like to see that happen.
I was
unseated by another Democrat.
Was it you I was talking with about, because the last time the other senator from Nevada is a creepy Republican named John Ensign, and the last time he ran, Chip Carter, the son of Jimmy, ran against him in the general election. Well, you know, just because it's Harry Reid, Chip, doesn't mean that that you're needed any less, buddy. I'd love to see Chip Carter run against Harry Reid. Now, the question is, could Chip Carter win a primary considering the number of magic underwear voters in Nevada? Because that's what gets Harry Reid returned again and again and again, apart from his corporate connections, is his magic underwear status.
You know, you bring up Carter, and I just, you know, and now kind of Bill Clinton as well. There's such a line in the sand between Republican ex-presidents and Democratic ex-presidents. Even Bill Clinton, who I considered a centrist Republican, after they leave office, the Republicans go and try and make money, especially off of war and death. Just look at George Bush the First, all that. But, you know, the most maligned president in modern times, Jimmy Carter, after he recovers from, you know, the disaster that was his presidency, with a lot of help from a stonewall in Congress, you know, went out and started building homes for people. Bill Clinton is gone, and, you know, there are questions about it, but that foundation has put more food in hungry people's bellies than like any other private organization in history.
Hard to argue with that. And the fact of the matter is, the other thing, John, that doesn't get brought up where Jimmy Carter is concerned, is that, you know, he was not an abysmal failure, per se.
No. No.
Go ahead.
No, he wasn't, but he was his hands were tied from how I've been able to assess it later, because I was very young during his presidency. And, you know, I grew up in a household where it was all just, you know, Jimmy Carter was a loser, you know, and that's all I got bashed into my head. And, you know, I got a little older and I started sitting there going, hey, you know, this guy keeps going out there and, like, with his own two hands going out there and building homes for homeless people. Maybe this guy's not exactly the dolt that everyone tried to claim that he was.
And the only, you know, the only ones who've been successful with, or it's a mark of the success of the right wing media monopoly, that meme has been successful. Because whenever you hear somebody like, you know, that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, mentioned Jimmy Carter, Hannity does everything but spit on the ground when he says his name. I had a sound clip a few nights ago that I never got around to playing of Glenn Beck, the guy whose hemorrhoids apparently migrated to his brain.
He's bizarre, man.
Oh, he's sick and twisted. And he said, you know, we need to recall the Nobel Prize from Jimmy Carter now. It's just not working out in Gaza there, is it, Jim? Okay? Just an evil, hateful nutbag. What none of these right wing goobers ever mention is that Jimmy Carter inherited literally a collapsing economy from 8 years of Republican rule. The economy wasn't collapsing under Lyndon Johnson when Lyndon Johnson left office on January 20th. 1968 or 1969. It was with Richard Nixon and persisting in Vietnam that we began to see the collapse of American economic hegemony. Ooh, there's one of those fancy words that gets right wingers all worked up, hegemony. And inflation ran wild. And yeah, when Carter was in office, there were people. If you wanted to buy a house when Jimmy Carter was in office, you took a home loan with 15% interest on it. 15%. But it didn't happen in a vacuum. Inflation went. You know, Nixon, a Republican president, had to enact price controls. I mean, I was just a little liberal when Nixon was in office, but I remember hearing that out of the mouth of folks like Walter Cronkite and Roger Mudd and Frank Severide and the Howard K. Smith and that crowd. I remember hearing about price controls, and I remember hearing about inflation, and I remember being a little boy and watching the goofy old freak Gerald Ford walk out and tell America. I mean, it's absent. If I was running video right now, John, you'd see me. I got my hand over my forehead and my eyes just picturing this. And folks who are, 10 or 15 or 20 years older than me will remember even more vividly Gerald Ford walking out to a podium with his suit jacket on and a white button with red letters that said, "Win." And he said he wanted all Americans to wear one of these buttons because it meant whip inflation now. That was the Republican solution to a tanked economy in 1975. A button. A marketing scam. And they want to blame Jimmy Carter for the bad economy? And then, and Ronald Reagan, St. Reagan fixed our economy. Bull! So, I mean, just that little bit of background. And then there's the energy policy, and, well, if we listen to Jimmy Carter, God almighty.
Bob, I just think of that, you know, that if we had listened to him then, how far along would we be with a green grid, fuel efficient, and maybe not even any more petrol-driven vehicles. I mean, really, you know, we're talking 30 years. a lot could have happened in 30 years, especially when we were supposedly having all of that great economic time. But this is also a right-wing thing. Take all the profits and invest nothing in the future.
Well, that's American capitalism. That is predatory. That's a predatory market.
Yep.
It's all the grasshopper and the ant, isn't it, John?
It sure is.
Yeah, eat it all now. We'll worry about being hungry later when there's no food.
Yep.
Geniuses, geniuses.
Boy, we've gone everywhere, but I got to tell you that the
we don't have the horn section to do this on anymore. So you know.
I know. Maybe we'll have to find a way to resurrect that someday. But you know, just this story, you know, about this window factory, I think is just another one of these, you know, little flags kind of sticking up, going, you know what, the people do have power.
Yeah, they do. And inspired business has power. Because that's an inspired business. And the question...
But look, these folks want to work. Why wouldn't you go and grab a whole bunch of people that are already organized, already have facilities, that want to work?
I know. And before we get too misty-eyed and hopeful, this little headline just in from CBS News...
Yeah.
You remember the FISA court?
Yes.
A U.S. Foreign Intelligence Court released a ruling today upholding the right of the President and Congress to wiretap private international phone conversations and intercept email messages without a court-issued warrant. Now, what do I want out of Barack Obama? I want a clear, published statement that that will not be done and that doing so will be deemed a violation of federal law. How's that?
Absolutely. Go back to the way it was where, okay, if it's something really, 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 you know, urgent, you have 3 days retroactively to get the warrant or else the information you get is not usable. That stipulation was always there.
Yeah, and we tend to forget that. What I don't understand is how the God they really are, John. They are going out and they're poking a thumb in our eye every time we blink, all the way to the end. I despise these bastards.
As you should.
It doesn't. I mean, I got more stories, not the same story, but I got more stories like that.
Lottie just said in the chat room, "Great, now Obama can bug the RNC."
Lottie's such an optimist. You know, I got it, and you know, the White House suddenly found the missing emails. Oh, there they are! Doggone it! That, you know, it's always in the last place you look.
Yeah, and then when they looked at him, what do you mean there's only 12?
And 8 of them are talking about inheriting money from a Nigerian prince. Well, John, it is already well through your Friday. Have a wonderful weekend, brother.
You too, man. You too. And like I said, I am massively green with envy for where you're going and what you're going to be doing there in D.C. And you just might have to make a special appearance on my show to let us all in on what's gone down.
You know what? I very well may do that. And I have to ask you, I know it'll mean a real sacrifice for you, but given what we've been through, are you going to be in the chat room at noon Eastern time on Tuesday?
Oh, you bet.
With your eyelids toothpicked open, I'm sure.
Oh mate, I'll be here. I'll have the TV feeds and the whole thing going, and yeah, I wouldn't miss watching that day live for anything.
Goodbye. Yeah. the only thing I'm worried about, you know, I'm flying in as George is flying out, and I don't want my pilot getting anywhere near the 50 miles of the airspace of Air Force One. Because one of the, you know, that trigger happy thumb thumb in the eye poking little bastard's going, hey, let's see if I still got immunity. Take that one out over there. I don't trust him not to. And you know, since Barack Obama couldn't stay in Blair House, you know, when he needed to before he took office, I'm wondering if maybe he could say that George Bush doesn't get to fly home on Air Force One because we need it. Man, I'm a petty little, aren't I?
Ah, but you know, man, I tell you, every time I think about the fact that we're finally getting to the end of the Bush drama, I just continue to have the same song playing over and over in my head, and that would be The Byrds. I'll probably feel a whole lot better when you're gone.
Or the Tom Petty version, which is pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Tom Petty's just, you know, the Byrds reincarnated in so many ways.
Well, and in either instance, you get jangling Rickenbackers, so that's pretty cool, too.
Oh, yeah, it's always a good thing. But, hey, mate, good to talk to you.
Say hi to Gail if she's not listening now. Hi, Gail.
All right, love to.
Look, there's an email from Gail. I said Gail, and the email popped up. Man, this is creepy.
You got to love the internets, man.
Internets and, you know, fourth dimension and all of that stuff. Take care, my friend.
Good night, mate.
Later.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Host of All Foxed Up, John Fox, of 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday nights. Do not miss it. It's three awfully fun hours. And a reminder, I mentioned Tuesday at noon in the chat room. Sadly, I won't be here, but it won't be for wanting to be. I will be on an airplane. I'm not leaving on a jet airplane. They don't fly those out of Beckley, West Virginia. I'll be leaving on a crop duster. But I'll be getting to D.C. and going to hang out with Guy James and go to the Progressive Media Summit, and I'm terribly, terribly psyched. I wish Guy and I were going to figure out a way to be on the air together, but I don't know if we can do that. So it doesn't look likely. But you know what? We may try. I'm not going to commit to anything because it's going to be a heck of a time there in D.C. and it's going to be an all day affair there with the Progressive Media Summit. But everybody will be. In the chat rooms, get there before noon. You know, be fashionably early, but high noon Eastern time in the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and you know, I mentioned last night, everybody show up in your horn gear. I just talk off the top of my head, and then ELO Sue, den mother of the chat room, goes out and makes it happen. So drop by the Horn Store at Cafe Press. Easiest thing to do is just to click on the link at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And let's all stand in solidarity because Sue has designed some new Horn T-shirts that say, I survived the Bush administration. Texas takes its village idiot off milk carton. Yes. And it's and we've got them in we've got an economy version of the T-shirt made of a slightly lighter weight tee, as well as the heavier weight. I think $11.99 for the lightweight, $17.99 for the full size. Get yourself a ball cap, and be there in the chat room to enjoy the exit stage right of George W. Bush. Let's keep this rolling along. Ah, see, you didn't. Dadgummit. Huh. You'll have that. But it is going to be a grand time. It's going to be a really grand time in Washington, D.C. And looking forward to getting to meet Guy James for the first time is I'm stoked. I am stoked. And, you know, I'm going to take with me a few little media gizmos. I'll take the video cam and the still cam. Maybe take a digital recorder. And I'm going to try to have the cameras out as I make my way from Dulles to D.C. to see the thronging masses of people who have come to Washington, D.C. to mark the end of what is truly America's long national nightmare and the dawning of some rays of hope and what I have described all along as just a chance. Just a chance. Just give us a chance to get well. And I think I'm looking forward to just talking to people on the bus, on the train, you know, bus from Dulles to the trains, and just talking, and how do you feel, and aren't you excited? Because I have a feeling the optimism is going to be nothing short of palpable. And then I'll be back on the air Thursday evening. Yeah, the details of what I brought up in talking to John just a couple of minutes ago. The FISA court released an unclassified version of an August 2008 ruling, a ruling that is, you know, 4.5 months old, 4 months old, that as CBS notes, seems to validate George W. Bush's claim that the government can act without court orders in gathering foreign intelligence. And that language is problematic. It's never been, the CIA's never required a court order to go spy on somebody in some foreign land. It's part of the CIA. So that's a little bit weaselly. What this is about is George Bush's evildoers declaring that they can spy on phone calls or emails even if they involve American citizens. Let's say that, like I hope to do someday, you've got a teenager. And that teenager is, of course, a high school student. And you think it would be good for your teenager to go in a supervised setting with a tour group and experience Paris. Or what happened to me as a teenager, Rome. And they call home, pumping those funny little telephone tokens. Do they still have those? Those goofy little, I mean, I remember being in Italy and you'd get them when they couldn't make exact change out of your 20,000 lira note. You'd get some phone tokens. And of course I was illiterate in Italian and it didn't make any sense what I said in English. Who am I going to call in Rome? Giving me change with telephone tokens. Things with, it looked like little slugs with dents in them. I don't know if they still use them or not. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of cell phones now are worldwide capable. You know, you have to get a different plan once you're outside the continental United States, but they will work in other parts of the globe. So maybe you've got one of those for your precious lumpkin, and you say, call me the minute you set foot on French soil so that I know that you're there safely. George Bush and his evildoers, people like David Addington and Dick Cheney and John Yoo, have argued that they have a right to spy on that call between you and your child at a momentous moment like that, where your young'un is just beginning to experience semi-adult freedom, and where your child's eyes are your eyes. And when that voice comes crackling over the telephone and says, oh, Daddy, it's like nothing I ever imagined. Oh, Mama, I want you to see the Louvre. And in your mind, the voice that's making those noises is about 22 inches long and a few hours old and swaddled in a warm cotton flannel blanket and looking up at you with those big, beautiful eyes that can't quite focus yet. And you speak softly. Love you, baby. Welcome. And you remember the first day you set eyes on them, and now they're standing an ocean away from you. And George Bush, that filthy son of a bitch, says that he has a right to eavesdrop on that conversation. Dear Mama, here's a picture that one of my new friends took of me in front of the Eiffel Tower. See how I'm holding my hands out? It looks like I'm holding the Eiffel Tower in front of, I'm holding the Eiffel Tower in my hands, LOLROFLMAO. Love you, Mama. Miss you, Mama. There's wireless all over the place here, so I'll send you lots more emails while I'm here, Mama. That no-good son of a bitch, George Bush, says that he has the right to see that email before you do. And so, apparently, does the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Appeals Court. Because, among other things, of a subservient, submissive, servile, gutless Congress that passed something called the Protect America Act. That says that George Bush can see your baby's emails before they get to you. That George Bush can hear words spoken by your beloved before they reach you. That is the level of obscenity that this administration, doing every evil that it can bring to its comprehension before it has to leave. That's what it's doing. 4 days, 16 hours, 20 seconds, and they're spending every last one of them trying to hurt this country a little bit more. So it's 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. Shortly, we will hear that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout offer his valedictory to the American people. This is the Horn. Down your street again, past your door, but you don't live there anymore. It's years since you've been there, and now you disappeared somewhere. I know.
since you've been there. And now you've disappeared somewhere, like out of space. You found some better place, and I miss you. Yeah. And I miss you.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, I don't know if we're going to fool with the valedictory or not. What's to be gained from it? Except maybe a headache and the desire to upend a bottle of cheap tequila or something. What I'd far rather do is check into an email real quick and then go to the phones. This just in from Gail. And I said, hey, that was wonderful. I was talking to John. I said, hey to Gail, and then email from Gail. And you know what? It was too quick for it to have been part of the latency of the Internet. I love that Twilight Zone-y kind of stuff. Bob, I just wanted to say a word in praise of the very many Jewish people who are standing up and condemning Israel's atrocities. The 10,000 people who marched in Tel Aviv last week, the 10 Jewish Americans who chained themselves across the entrance to the Israeli consulate in L.A. and shut it down for 3 hours yesterday, veteran British MP Gerald Kaufman, who condemned Israel's actions in Parliament a few days ago, and countless others. I consider them to have more courage in their little fingers than I have in my whole person. Unlike them, no one is likely to make death threats against me for speaking out for the Palestinians. I honor them for acting in accord with the long and noble history of Jewish people standing up for the rights of others in countries like South Africa, the civil rights movement in the United States, and around the world, and for refusing to let the Israeli extreme right redefine Judaism as a religion of blood and slaughter. Stay human, Gail. About a million times better than I could have said it myself. Because that heritage is there. In so many ways, that's part of the spirit that led the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And Gail is also right there. I read another story yesterday about an American American Jewish activist who has received death threats for standing up against this barbarity. And I can't imagine what that must feel like to have someone. And that phrase, Lord, I hate this phrase. Self-hating Jew. Because that is taking, we all know how I feel about organized religion, okay? But nonetheless, that is taking one's own faith or a shared faith and using it against another human being. Self-hating Jew.
And that phrase is used, it's used time and time again, and it's sickening. Because the phrase is used by people against others whom they deem not to be sufficiently Jewish because they are not sufficiently bloodthirsty, when in fact the history of the last 2,000 years says the exact opposite. Peace and harmony may be achieved. I was in a little chat conversation with our dear friend, our blogger, Texas Betsy, the other day. And we were talking about what was then called Moorish Spain, when Muslims and Jews and Christians lived together in peace. I think there's a 12th century example of a great Jewish scholar who was the nearest advisor to the caliph in Baghdad. You see, what's going on in the occupied territories is not the norm. It is a created thing. It's like when you take a person and torment them long enough to turn them away from their basic human nature and dehumanize them, and then wonder why they're mean. What we witness now is a created thing in Israel and Gaza and the occupied West Bank. These are created circumstances and not a function of the inner workings of human nature. So thank you for bringing that up, Gail. That needed badly to be said. And we go to the phones. And Sandra joins us from California. Hey, Sandra. Welcome aboard.
Bob, listen, you know, that email sort of said a lot, a whole bunch.
Yeah, it did, because there's no discounting the activities of or the determination and courage of the Freedom Riders. You know, many of whom were young Jewish kids who came down south to stand side by side in front of the dogs, in front of the fire hoses, and in fact found themselves in an earthen dam in Mississippi.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you know, there's a amazing history of joint struggles in this country between, you know, in the civil rights movement. I mean, it's just, that's why it's just so I'm just gobsmacked by the brutality that's being shown to these trapped people. I mean, I can't even believe what's going on. But did you happen to catch the head of the General Assembly? Wow. His speech was really worth checking out. The guy from Nicaragua?
No, I didn't.
He's the president right now. I guess they have rotating, obviously. He's the president of the General Assembly, the one that should matter, but it never does.
Yeah.
That's where everyone's represented. Anyway, he said something. I was like, oh, snap. He said, Israel, who has benefited completely, it's a creation of UN resolutions, and basically how dare they ignore this one. I was rolling. I said, oh, shit. Damn, he hit it on the head. You see what I'm saying? He said that it's disgusting that we're sitting here fiddling while Gaza is burning. I mean, it was a very damning speech he gave. And I realize it's just words, but I just was really quite shocked to hear it finally. You know, someone who's speaking the truth about the state of Israel, you know? They owe everything to the UN.
Yes. Literally.
It's
very existence.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just was a really sort of poignant speech and really sort of castigating the right people. And, you know, I'm about to direct my vitriol to the Arab states. They're like, you know, what's up? What the hell? Why can't you come up with a uniform anything.
Well, you are absolutely right in that regard, Sandra, because I go back to some very, well, infamous words. When Saddam Hussein had rolled his tanks up to the Kuwaiti border and very politely sent us a little note, a little telex, saying that he had a land dispute with Kuwait and was about to settle it, and would that be okay? Yeah, he asked permission, Sandra. And would that be okay with the United States if he just took care of this little land dispute? Because the Kuwaitis had been slant drilling his oil reserves for years. And April Glaspie, whose name would, you wish her name would go down in more infamy than it does, April
yeah.
Glaspie, on direction of the George H.W. Bush White House, sent back a telex that said the United States does not take a position in Arab-Arab conflicts. Tanks rolled, and the next thing you know, then George H.W. Bush gets the shrill, shrieking phone call from the King of Saudi Arabia saying, you got to do something about this. And the next thing you know, we're sitting there watching Storm and Norman Schwarzkopf giggle over videos from video footage from bombs.
Yeah, well, now what you're getting out of Gaza is the people screaming, where are the Arab nations? You see what I'm saying?
That's what I'm getting at is that the Arab-Arab conflicts, we turn a blind eye to, and that is a function, Sandra, of racism and bigotry in this country.
Well, yeah, and I just sort of, you know, the way the sort of balance of power issues going on there, where most of those dictators / whatever they are so afraid of the people in the streets. If you look at what's going on in, say, Jordan and all these other, I don't know what they are, quasi-moderate states, the people are about to explode. They're like, you know, what's up with this? And the leadership is not responding. They're divided. It's just, that's equally disgusting because, in the meanwhile, every day more and more children are sort of dying.
Well, I was listening to Malloy last night, and he was reporting on the 22 seconds that Brian Williams spent on NBC.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. You know what?
And that, by the way, 300 of those are children.
Yeah, oh, no, it was despicable.
22 seconds, and a by the way.
Yeah, no, well, nothing's worse. Did you happen to get a gander at Thomas Friedman's column?
Yeah, I did.
My God, that's scary. This fool is saying, well, you know, saying that Israel is, you know, this is an education moment. I'm like, that son of a bitch. You know what I mean? When did the New York Times advocate killing civilians? I didn't know that was a policy of the New York Times.
Murder some sense into them. Kill them, I say. And it passed, and you know, it's almost like what I did last night with that stupid clip from Rush Limbaugh talking about his trip to the White House for lunch and how he got a little birthday cake and got his napkin in the dipped his napkin in the ranch dressing. This is what qualifies as professional, in his case, broadcasting, or in Thomas Friedman's case, professional journalism? That? Really?
No, I despise Friedman on the best days, and the most joy I'm getting is the fact that his wife's company is tanking. Hello. Because they own that G whatever for the malls of America.
Yeah.
Well, they're about to, you know, if they can't make a payment soon, they're about to go belly up and their shares are like a dollar. So, you know what? Oh, well.
They might. Do you mean that Mr. and Mrs. Friedman might be down to 5 mansions?
Oh, 25 million instead of 200. I mean, who knows? What I'm saying is that he's despicable. He's disgusting when he writes about economics, and I had forgotten how despicable he is when he talks about matters of war. Because he's a sociopath. That kind of writing, that doesn't make any sense what he wrote, because he would never apply it to any other situation, you see, except for, I guess, Iraq. What am I saying? This man is, it's war all the time with Friedman. But I despise that it has to be on the pages of the newspaper of record, right? What? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, newspaper of record left in the window shade of the back seat and warped in the sun. Sorry, that's my vinyl record reference. But yeah, if that's the newspaper of record, I don't want to hear it.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought maybe you might want to check out that the UN thing.
Oh, I will. Have you heard this? And some of this is beyond my comprehension, Sandra. It's really honest to God beyond my comprehension. Egypt is negotiating with Hamas to get a ceasefire, and Egypt is at 1 year, and Hamas is at 10 days. I remember being subjected to some sales training once upon a time, and it was this thing called getting to yes.
But that's how far apart they are?
That's what I heard this morning. 10 days, and yeah, I mean, that's not a negotiation.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, the thing is, though, is when are we going to ever see any reasonable discussion in our foreign policy about these people who have been depossessed? You know, they talk as if this started on the 27th in this country, you know?
Well, yeah, and, you know, Susan pointed that out earlier in the program, and she sent me an email because she was just aghast. She said that she'd just been wandering around the archives, and she listened to my program from the day after the 2006 elections, and that was back when we still had QNN, Quality News Network, at the top of the hour. And the QNN story on the day after, and this just struck me with sublime irony, on the day after the congressional elections where the Congress turned from Republican to Democrat, there was a story about the Israelis bombing a UN headquarters in Gaza. That's 2006, November. Now, am I the only one that is struck a little bit by that, by the fact that every time the Israelis seem to think that they're going to get someone in power who might not bow and scrape to them, that they get that they get their killing in real quick before the change can come?
Well, no, and this is the thing with this latest bit. You know, Hamas is making too much noise about settling, you know what I mean, wanting to get to a point where they can negotiate. And, no, we can't have that happen because, you know, I'll be honest, it looks like to me that Israel, they want the rest of Gaza. They want to push them to Egypt and push the West Bank Palestinians all the way into the rest of the way into Jordan. And that's part of the problem with those two Arab states. They sure in the hell don't want to deal with that. You see what I'm saying?
Well, of course. And
it's so disgusting for those Palestinians. They're like definitely some despised people.
Look, there are people in Israel, and I'm certainly by no means saying that it is even a majority, but there are people in Israel who have some degree of power or another, and they're going back to that passage in what we call the Old Testament in Deuteronomy that says the boundaries of your land shall be from the sea to the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. And there are hardcore fundamentalist, absolutely weirdos who think that that is what the boundaries of modern Israel should be.
Well, obviously, them idiots are in power because what they're doing right now, the aftermath of that, is what is that going to look like? Some sort of Somalian nightmare? I mean, really, Bob, what's going to be left as far as trying to manage that strip of
hair? How long until we hear about the cholera?
Well, no, exactly. I mean, no, it's just...
Because, see, if in a fragile situation like this, and I'm just going to say this, Sandra, in a fragile situation like this, if you push it far enough, then nature will take over.
Well, yeah.
Things like cholera that are absolutely preventable and only happen in the most desperate of circumstances will break out, and it will kill thousands.
And these effed up strands of, I lost my thought. Consumption, whatever that's called.
The tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis, yes. That, you know, no, but it's just, the whole thing is really stunning. And we bombing UN things, like you said. I mean, it seems to be sort of a nonstop event for the Israelis to do. And I'm so sick of the oh, there was militants there. I mean, how long are they going to use that tired ass canard? That is such a lie.
Well, in a land that has been hammered like this, if you live in Gaza and you're not militant at this point after what's been going on for the last 3 weeks,
yeah,
there's something wrong with you.
Well, no, but I mean, like I said, there's a school of thought that thinks, yeah, they want to keep radicalizing these people because they don't ever want to deal with anybody that can possibly present a united front for the Palestinians to actually get this, quote, two-state solution. I mean, I think they need to do a one-state solution, but, you know, that'll never happen.
Well, do you know the story of, obviously, as well-read as you are, Sandra, you know about ancient Sparta, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Sparta had neighbors, and I'm not talking about the Corinthians or the Athenians. They had neighbors right on their territorial borders, and they were called the Helots.
Mm.
And the Spartans killed the Helots at will, but they never killed so many of them that they wiped them out. They kept them in a perpetual state of subservient remnant status, and then they would send their young military men out as a function of their training to go kill helots. Because they constantly reinforced that if we let these helots get any sort of self-respect about them, they'll come and kill us in our sleep. And so young Spartan men, at part of the Spartan military, would go out, torment, kill, destroy, plunder, and keep the helots in a constant state of terror. Well, how are the, you know, because there are certain analogies I refuse to use, how are the Palestinians, how are the Gazans in particular, not Israel's helots?
Yeah, no, that's a, you know what, that's an excellent analogy, and I mean, those people, for all intents and purposes, are akin to slaves, you know? They can't leave. They can't own property. Don't let me start on the list.
Yeah, that just blows my mind. They can't leave. Sit there and take it.
This is the first time in modern times that you had a group of people who can't even have refugee status from a war. It's so extreme. You know what I mean? They can't leave. This is the thing that I can't even get my head around, is that, oh, my God, yes, you want to flee a war, like, say, in those horrible places in Africa, right? Well, then people can flee. They can leave. They can try, right?
Well, the Christian community that we killed almost down to the last Iraqi, could it leave? And the brain, you know, I'm sure you've seen the articles about the Iraqi brain drain.
Yeah, well, I think
they fled into Syria. And it creates a humanitarian crisis, but they can flee.
Yeah, but I mean, those people are, you know, they go from one a hell to another hell, but it's not a hell where bombs are raining down on them. And you can't, you know, these people are just jumping from one house to the next, hoping that, it's just horrible. I don't even know, as an American, you know, I can't even relate. Let's be honest.
No, you can't relate, nor can I, nor can anybody within the territorial confines of the United States listening to this program who hasn't lived in something akin to it. And the other thing is, no matter, and I said it rather harshly the other night, but I don't know how to say it prettily. You and I, Sandra, whether we like it or not, we're participating in it because we pay our taxes.
You know, and that's the thing that's gotten me so riled up is the fact that, well, no, I can't be some sort of, apathetic, voyeur on it. I have to sit there and think, you know what? This can be ameliorated by our country not providing the aids and weapons. There is a way to pare this down. That's why, you know, it's good to see that there's the protest seems to be on the increase. And you know where I get the idea, the news that we're protesting here? Not from this media.
No.
I hear about it from BBC or Channel 4 or
Al Jazeera.
Or, God help me, Press TV, you know, Iranian state television.
Yeah.
But, and it's because, yeah, you're right. We're participating in it, and it's just awful, you know. And it's really sickening, that resolution. I still can't get past that one.
Well, okay, this is the polling portion of the program, Sandra.
Oh, good.
Who do you believe? Do you believe Ehud Olmert, who said that he has so much power over George Bush that he was able to place a call to make him tell Condoleezza Rice to get the hell away from that UN resolution, and that he even pulled George Bush off a podium to do it? Or do you believe the Bush administration who said, oh, no, that never happened, he didn't do that? Or do you believe Ehud Olmert who said, oh, yeah, it did? I mean, because that's the progress of events. Now, these dirty little sons of bitches have lied to us for 8 years. And suddenly they're telling the truth when they say that George Bush did not act like Pinocchio with his strings yanked?
Well, yeah, I mean, that story is so odd. A, that Olmert is, I mean, that's another sociopath. I mean, I don't really know what to believe, except what I know is that she timidly all of a sudden voted, because I was watching it, she timidly voted to abstain after having participated quite energetically before. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. There was a sea change in her behavior.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, and then, you know, people gasping all around in the assembly. You know what I'm saying? So it's easy to sort of say, oh, okay, but I can't believe that Israel is, you know, wagging the U.S. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't want to believe that.
I don't either. But given my opinion of the reputation for truth telling of the Bush administration, I am hard pressed not to think of that.
Yeah, no. That story, I mean, yeah, it's incredible, that story. Anyway, I couldn't believe it. I'm not too sure what to believe. That's kind of.
Well, the only thing you can, in a situation like that, all you can do is walk away with one thing for certain: somebody is lying.
Yeah, well, that's true, and the evidence is that, once again, the U.S. is looking like a smuck by siding with some nihilistic pigs and giving them weapons galore. Have you heard about these dime weapons they're using there?
No.
Well, these are sort of the next generation up from the uranium depleted.
Because we need a next generation of those.
Well, no, this is crazy. These ones are they're encased in some material that's malleable to the point where when they explode, they only explode in a small area. That's supposed to be the upside. The downside is that the amputations they're seeing, they're basically just sort of severed. There's no shrapnel anywhere near these wounds.
It just shears flesh.
It shears by crushing. I mean, the power is incredible, and they're called, I forget the abbreviation, but they're DIME. DIME is the acronym. But this is what the doctors are saying they're using on these people now. And they're new weapons. They were created in 2006. Hello.
There are... Because the old stuff wasn't doing the job well enough.
Well, no, but it's a testing ground, too. You know, the poor, I mean, I am just sort of these people. It's like, please, someone tell me what they did to deserve this, too, you see?
And dense, inert, metal, explosive.
Right. That's it, man. That's horrible. It's horrible. I was reading about
it. Well, thank God there's somebody out there looking for the weapon to end all war.
Ah, you know. And I think there's some radioactivity involved, too. I mean, it's sort of stunning. And these are all sort of, it's not being denied by the IDF. So that's what's so worrying.
Well, you know, that phrase, blowback, keeps coming back to my mind. You know, Osama bin Laden was a creature we created out of George H.W. Bush's Gulf War I. You know, because we put our jets and our planes and our tanks and our men and all of that on sacred Saudi sand. I don't know what it is about the sand over there, but people get real worked up over it.
Yeah.
And as a concept, and at the time when September 11th, 2001 rolled around, we still had our tanks and planes and bombs and weapons and so forth on sacred Saudi sand. And when, and after September 11th, you know, the 6 foot 7 inch the skinny Arab with the white robes and the dialysis machine said, "We did this because you had your tanks and bombs and planes and stuff on sacred Saudi sand. Get them off." And George did. Do you remember that? George did, Sandra. And guess what? We haven't had, I mean, for all the talk and so forth, we have not had an Osama bin Laden problem since.
Well, no, but you know the whole conflating it with religion is a load, because there's this guy, Robert Papp, he's a whatever, international relations. Anyway, he's done research that show that the suicide terrorism is all about land. Hello, land. People's land. It's a lot, you know, they try to make it into this religious, they hate us, they hate our freedoms. That's a load. Them people, it's always involved with territory.
You take my land, I take your life.
And you know what I mean? If they look at, they looked at this, it's so interesting because, you know, we're told just a load about this suicide bombing as if it's some sort of mindless, they're crazy, looking for virgins in the sky type of stuff, when these are just people fighting back. We may disagree or find it horrifying, which I do, but there's always land involved with this, which is, I just find it really,
And sometimes the land issue is complicated by God told me this is my land.
No, exactly. I'm not discounting that, but you know, it's really interesting because all conflicts throughout the, you know, throughout history is always tied with,
Well, I think, you know, I think now about, with you mentioning that, Sandra, I think about the first peoples here in North America who, in an act of utter desperation by the time, and you know, you can read about this in that wonderful old book, Black Elk Speaks, and in which, I forget which tribe it was, the Sioux perhaps, who, because of the desperation and that had been visited upon them, enacted or absorbed or adopted this shamanistic cult that said that if they wore their ghost shirts, they would be invisible to American cavalry. And so they put their ghost shirts on, and they went out and got slaughtered. And it was because they'd been driven off their land, because they had been driven into the most dire poverty-ridden circumstances, because they had been driven away from their food supply. And how the hell is that different from somebody who's been told that they'll get 72 virgins if they strap on the dynamite belt?
And I only reason why I'm mentioning this because I can't help but, you know, think about the end game, because, you know, I try to be more of a big picture person. And the end game I'm seeing is not pretty, because I don't think it's going to end well for Israel, and it's probably going to blow back on us, you know?
There you go. That's what I was getting at a minute ago. where we could foster peace, but for 8 years we have done everything and it's not even benign neglect. It's active, hateful neglect that the Bushies have adhered to. We now have to worry. We don't just have to worry about pissed off expatriate Saudis, and we don't just have to worry about pissed off Afghanis, and we don't just have to worry about pissed off Iraqis. Now we get to worry about pissed off Palestinians.
Well, but I also
we got anybody left? Pissed off Syrians, Turks, Lebanese, and Jordanians, and Egyptian. Well, no, they're pissed off at us already. We're running out of people to piss off over there.
Well, and I think that a lot of it will take the form, you know, you may see some of these autocrats fall in the Mideast behind this stuff, too. I think that'll be the first stop, you know, for the fallout of this latest war. I don't really see anything that great coming out. I'm telling you, it looks bad.
It looks real bad. And frankly, no relief in sight.
Yeah, I don't, you know, and I just think, wow. Anyway, I'll let you go. But one thing I wanted to say was, when is that pig speaking tonight? His farewell thing. Is it over with?
I think it's over with. I think we got past him.
His father didn't do it, which mercifully, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this pig doing this? Of all presidents to give a farewell speech, are you kidding me?
Well, because, you know, that one is coming into office and may need some wisdom and guidance.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I knew that it would be, I mean, I'm grateful that we were able to have this conversation about him leaving as opposed to scrambling because they declared this, that, or another. But I am, you know, I am can't wait for him to go away. He's like sort of, I don't know. It's everywhere. Bush.
Yeah, leave, goodbye, go, quit. You know, yeah, you just want to cue up the Von Trapp family singer. So long, farewell, Auf Wiedersehen to you. Goodbye already.
Oh, I know, but do they show, are they going to show, like, I remember when the change happened in 2000, you remember how long it took for Clinton to leave? Remember that?
I don't want to go. I like it here.
It was so damn funny. I mean, he just really sort of, you know, he shook everyone. It was just a spectacle. It was fucking fantastic. Now, I'm wondering, you know.
Well, I wonder if he'll sneak out of the White House the way he snuck in. Remember how they had to sneak George into the back of the White House?
Shut up. That's right. No, but, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I'll see it soon enough, but.
I've got this vision of George leaving in a big nose and glasses thing.
You know, yeah, I mean, what's going to, you know, are they going to do a split screen and, you know, we're going to see, oh, God, anyway, so, because we're doing a brunch. And so I'm just going to be front and center with popcorn, man.
Well, Sandra, I'll be thinking about you. I'll be in the air at the time. So.
Oh, okay. Are you going there?
Well, I'm going there. I'm not going there for it, but I'm going to be.
Are you going to do a show?
Nah, I won't. I'm going for a progressive media summit. Finally going to get to meet Guy James. So, you know, I'm psyched. Totally stoked.
Wow.
Okay. So I'll be trying to fight. I'll be trying to struggle my way into D.C. and I'll at least get to see the huddled masses there, yearning with anticipation.
Oh no, HD widescreen. That's all good. That's fine. That's all I need.
Well, Sandra, have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
And let's keep things rolling on. I tell you what. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. You know, was that Gail that wrote the email?
Yeah.
Was that her name? Yeah, I'm bad with names, you know that.
Yeah, that's John's significant other.
Yes, no, I was absolutely spot on. You know, I don't think it's, you know, it's not of my nature to hate. And I try to never, ever, ever, you know, isolate one group. I don't think I've ever, you know, I don't even try to, like, isolate the Republicans and let them, you know, blame them all for the obvious crimes that have been committed over the years. But, you know, I sent you that link, and, you know, there are certainly, you know, you can't even say it. You can't even say, like, you know, there are just good people in the world, and then there are bad people in the world. And I think if you were to watch that link I sent you regarding what Max Blumenthal, you know, went and witnessed in front of the, I think,
in front of the Israeli embassy in New York City. Yeah, that video caught me a bunch of flack.
Imagine. Well, I mean, they were only calling for a final solution. Why would it cause you any flack?
Oh, no, they weren't. No, they weren't.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no, they weren't. No, I know. They wouldn't. They wouldn't say anything like that. Like, we got to deal with them and we got to get rid of all of them. And no, they wouldn't ever say anything like that. And, you know, but that's exactly what they're doing, and that is exactly what they said. And, you know, I don't understand how anybody could ever pretend to walk such a righteous path and do exactly what so many have been saying that they were doing. I mean, when you know, I don't know how many thousands is. I mean, when is it going to end? That's my big question. When is it going to end? 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, a million, 2 million. I mean, when is it enough? Is it ever going to be enough?
When there aren't any more.
Like, that's exactly right. I mean, because that's the mentality that we have. I mean,
and see, that's why I said with Sandra, if you pressure, you know, the water's gone. Okay, the water has to be trucked in. There's no public water supply. The electricity's gone. Everything that supports so-called modern life is done, all right? Mm-hmm. And now you have collapsed rubble everywhere, and things just blown to bits, and you have a human catastrophic human nightmare going on, and you have no way to eliminate waste. You have no way to clean up things where disease can breed. And if you push that, if you push that habitat hard enough, to use strictly biological terms, if you pressure if you pressure the carrying capacity of any given land hard enough, then eventually nature kicks in and you get disease processes like tuberculosis and like cholera, and then it takes over and you step back and say, well, you know, it's not like we caused the cholera. I mean, I'm sorry there's 50,000 dead, but we didn't introduce any cholera bugs. You understand? I mean, does that make any sense?
I understand, yep. Exactly. Call them down, you know. And that's, you know, I mean, well, what are we saying here? What are we talking? Well, what the hell are they doing? I mean, you know, well, what are you doing? To what ends? Who would ever, I mean, we've talked about this 100 million different ways in so many different countries. I don't care how many, which country it is. It's the same grotesque beast. I mean, it doesn't matter what country it is. It's irrelevant. I don't even think of country. I'm just thinking situation. And that's how I try. That's how I tend to think of geopolitical everything is the situation. You know, who cares if one team's red and one team's green? It's irrelevant. And that's kind of what, you know, I mean, that's exactly what we're looking at here. I mean, we're looking at there is no difference. It has nothing to do with that they're Islamic. It has nothing to do with that they're Palestinian. It has nothing to do with that they're Jewish. They're a human being. And they're trapped in this city, and they get bombs rained down on them. They get these new weapons tested on them. They have, and that's not the newest weapon. Oh, man, they have so many weapons. They have invisible bullets, bullets that shoot subsonically and are made of chrome, so there is no glint and this and that and this. And I mean, it's ridiculous that the kinds of weapons that...
Science marches on.
And what's... You know, I mean, and then, you know... It's like a freaking Fallout game. I mean, because that's the end game. You know, like, if you haven't played the game Fallout 1, 2, or 3, you know, I'd certainly recommend, you know, giving yourself a whirl on it. And, you know, seeing, because this is the future that we're headed to if any of us live through the future.
Well, ain't that the truth?
I mean, and that's, you know, and there'll always be one or two cockroaches left, and we're... kind of like those, and there'll probably be a couple of isolated tribes with bones in their nose before too long, but, you know...
There was a time on planet Earth, Albert, when humanity had been reduced to no more than 2,000 individuals in Africa. And every last one of us are related to one of those 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's... Yeah.
And we're fighting over what? We're fighting over something.
Sacred sand.
Sacred sand or just what, you know, and actually I don't even think we're fighting over land. I think land is...
It's status.
It's
sneeches. You got beautiful little twin girls somewhere along the way. I know you've read Dr. Seuss's sneeches to them. Sneeches with stars on their bellies and sneeches with no stars upon theirs.
I'm sorry, I just think it's deeper than that. And I think that's a good outline, sure, right? Yeah, that belongs in the periphery. But I think there's an agenda. I mean, and I don't see how you can imagine that there isn't an agenda.
Yeah, you are found wanting in this or that characteristic, and therefore it's okay to kill you. Because this one or the other characteristic makes you less human than me.
That's just the mechanics. I mean, that's just the mechanics.
Well, that's the psychology.
Yeah, people are not the ones pulling the lever. The ones that are the ones that fund and funnel and, you know, I mean, erect these walls and make these plans. I mean, this is not, I don't think this is an organic process whatsoever. This isn't, I mean, this is long-standing things. This is what we're going to do. Look at it. It's too orchestrated to be just some sort of random event. I mean, these things are, I mean, we already have the Christian book, which tells us what's going to happen. We have, and every time that they do this, every time the Israelis do something like this, I mean, all it does is solidify the right wing in this country.
Well, how much longer do we have to listen to fundamentalists of any stripe holler for millennium, second coming of Jesus, okay, so we got Jesus coming back,
Jews are calling for the Messiah.
The crazy fundy Jews are calling for the Messiah, and the crazy fundy Muslims are calling for the Mahdi. God help us all if they show up at the same time.
I'll tell you what. I think they need to.
I mean, and you know, somewhere in the Mexican lands, there are still people who are looking for the return of the Quetzalcoatl.
And Don Juan.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, it's speaking of, as soon as you get me onto the Mayans, I'm into the whole other topic, another epoch of reality, but. Have you seen the Alex Gray print of Barack Obama?
Yes. Yes.
It's kind of creepy, I think, anyway. creep me out. Just creep me out a little bit. And I love Alex Gray. I think Alex Gray is going to be one of the... Yeah, he just does the most amazing things I've ever seen. But
it's a little unsettling. Yeah, I'll buy that.
It is. It's a little creepy, and I know he's for him, but at the same time, he's just the artist. And, yeah, it's everything else that paints it. And I think, in a sense, I mean, you know, I've made the joke many, many times, and my friends that are listening right now, if they're listening right now, they'll hit the stream later. They'll know. The people that know me personally, knowing the things I've called Obama and what he's going to wind up, probably the role in history that he's going to wind up playing, because I think that the people that funnel and pull these strings, you know, I mean, I think he may be exaggerating a little bit, but I don't think he's exaggerating that much when he says he calls up and he says, I want to talk to Bush now. I mean, heck, he might have just been able to call Condi and said, excuse me, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you're not allowed.
You're not allowed. And that's it. And what did she do? Did she do it? No. No, she didn't. So what happened? Yeah, of course. I mean, these are the things like, you know, I mean, you know, and I don't want to sit here and, you know, I mean, the Jews already think that this is a second Holocaust.
You mean the rockets? Well, that's what that crazy woman in the Max Blumenthal video said. It's the Nazis, the Hamas are the Nazis all over again. And I've had that said to me privately too. Hey, Albert, I hate to cut our conversation short, but I've got stacked up phone lines here. And
hit them all.
All right,
you know I love you.
All right, take care, brother.
Bye.
And I tell you what, I'm going to run over. If you're on hold, stay on hold, and I will get to you. Well, there's the first one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, I have one question for, like, very right-wing pro-Israeli types.
Okay.
One fundamental question, and I don't want to trigger at Mark, our good friend Mark. I love Mark. But in his heart of hearts, and he's really got to look deep inside his heart for this one. If there wasn't oil in the region, would Israel exist today?
I'm not sure about what they would.
They absolutely would not. If Israel's neighbors were not pooling with oil, I don't think a state of Israel would even exist today. I'm almost certain of it.
Well, the reason I say that there would be is simply because, Kevin, oil was important by the end of the Second World War. It had stopped. It had certainly the German drive to get oil had been their undoing, as it was in the case of Japan's attempt to take and hold the oil fields of the South Pacific. It was clearly important, but if you read the whole history of the movement to return. To return the Jews to the Middle East, it's all predated by even the discovery of oil.
Oh yeah, well, you know, you had the Zionist movement, which was going on in the middle 19th century, and what would have probably end up happening if the importance of oil had not come into the equation? It would have been just that. It would have been the equivalent to Mormons in Paraguay.
Well, but the Moonies are there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's one of those type of situations. Okay, you have these strange people in a sea full of brown people, again, like Mormons in Paraguay, you know. It wouldn't be this whole Israel, and I'm almost certain of it.
Well, yeah, and let's be clear that the history is such that, you know, a two-state solution was what was originally proposed.
Yeah.
And from the moment of its inception in radically smaller territorial confines, the war was begun in 1948 against Israel, and, you know, not necessarily by Israel on anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Because the Arab states said, stop them now or this problem will only get worse. There was no, you know, there was no eliminationist rhetoric, you know, kill all Jews. It was this state. And to this day, you know, the rhetoric that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad uses is always with reference to the Zionist state. There's nothing in there about killing all the Jews. If he had a genocidal impulse, the rather substantial Jewish population that exists in Iran today wouldn't exist.
Exactly.
And they worship as they please. They live, they do business, and so there's nothing but insanity in arguing that when he talks about eliminating the Zionist state, that he's talking about killing all the Jews. He's not. He just isn't. Now, he's a Holocaust denier. He is that. And for that, I brand him nuts and possibly evil, likely evil, because I've never met a Holocaust denier who was a good person.
Well, usually they're all kind of a-holes.
Well, I would take away the kind of part of that, Kevin, but yeah. I tell you what, let me roll on here. Good to hear from you. I'm sorry. See, you guys stack the lines up at the end of the program, and then it get into a spot. But I appreciate it, Kevin, and we will talk soon.
Okay, brother.
All right, later. Bye now. And again, I will get to every lit up phone that I've got here, even if we have to run over by a few minutes. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, man, what's up?
Well, same old stuff. There's an awful lot of very intelligent people that call this program.
Stunning, isn't it?
Say that. Yes, it is.
I get more of an education than anybody gets from me, I can tell you that.
Well, you know, listeners, a whole lot of listeners that get an education in, too, me being one of them. But I want to kind of change the subject. Because I really don't feel I'm qualified to talk about that, except I can't understand why people hate each other.
I know.
It just...
So put the clutch in.
It completely baffles me, you know. But what I wanted to say about is that, you know, we have... There's some very exciting things and times coming here. And, you know, of course, the inauguration of our new president. And I watched part of Georgie's farewell. And, you know, the man's in complete denial. I don't know what else to say.
Well, I was mercifully saved from that by Sandra and Kevin and you. Was he just in La La Land?
Well, yeah. I mean, like he's always been. You know, I mean, you know, whatever he's done, he was the one that made the tough choices, and he deserves respect for that. You know, he's the one that decided that we should become a country of torturers, and you know that we should take away all people's civil rights and habeas corpus and be able to spy on everybody, and you know, so therefore he deserves respect, which I personally don't buy, and you know, I'm sure the majority of Americans don't buy. But what I wanted to talk about is I want you to think and people to start thinking about what is going to transpire after January 20th at noon, and that, you know, like I know Obama seems to be hedging on, you know, investigating or prosecuting any of these people for war crimes or you know.
Or any of the other crimes.
Crimes, yes, you know. And, you know, there's an awful lot of crimes just against the American people, which haven't been war crimes. You know, I don't think armed robbery is considered a war crime, but that's certainly what they've done without a gun.
Oh, yeah, because every family in America, it's like we've walked in the door and said, wow, they got the TV and the silver.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But you got to realize after noon on January 20th, think of the people that are going to come forward. Think of the whistleblowers. Think of the people that are now going to be free from retaliation of the people that were in charge here. And, you know, I think it's going to put the new administration and Congress in a position where, you know, things are going to come out and people are going to be willing to testify and produce evidence where they have absolutely no choice but to investigate and prosecute these people to the fullest.
And I think that's why Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island said what he said that I mentioned a little bit ago. He said, I understand if Barack Obama doesn't want to do all the looking back at what was done, that he's got pressing problems and he needs to go forward. But he said, Congress has a different function, and if Congress won't do it, I'll do it myself.
Well, and that is exactly right. You know, Congress has to get off their ass and become Congress. And the Senate has, you know, both houses. You know, how about you guys taking responsibility? You know, because maybe you weren't the robbers, but you certainly allowed the robbers to exist and to flourish.
Yeah, what's the word? Enablers.
Enablers, exactly. Exactly.
And I don't think White House would make a statement like that if he didn't have some idea that somebody was going to come talk to him.
And, you know, exactly. And, you know, all it takes is one person with enough gonads to step forward and to, you know, well, you know, to be willing to do this, then other people will get, you know, be emboldened to join him.
Well, if this wasn't the last week of the Bush administration, Wayne, do you think that lady from the Pentagon, the judge, a judge for heaven's sakes, would have come forward in the last day? And
no.
Said, we committed torture. I refuse to refer this individual for trial because the evidence that was gotten from him was gotten by torture.
Right. And isn't it nice to hear the designee for the new attorney general or whatever problems anybody may have with him to say that waterboard is torture?
Yeah. And to say that we already have legal precedent for prosecuting Americans who do it.
Yes.
Because he said we prosecuted Americans when they did it in Vietnam.
And we prosecuted Japanese when they did it in World War II. You know, so, well, you know, I just wanted to put that thought in people's minds. I think, you know, the next month after this inauguration, I think we're going to hear things that maybe even we couldn't imagine as to what these people are.
Maybe there's a reason that however many hundreds of thousands of dollars are being spent of federal taxpayer money to build a big iron gate in front of George's new cottage in Dallas.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Yeah,
yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that on air or off, either way. Federal, Wayne.
Prevailing wage job.
Federal? Yeah, you're damn right. The federal money is going to be spent to build George a compound gate in front of his little, 11,000 square foot mini mansion on a cul-de-sac in Dallas. That's federal money. That's kind of got to be Davis Bacon, don't it?
I would say so.
You know, I think that would be
a way around it, believe me.
Yeah, but that would be it's Texas, you know.
Yeah.
But that would be a lovely, lovely thing to do, to sue over the construction of that gate.
Exactly. You know, when Truman left the White House and, you know, his approval ratings weren't very high when he left.
No.
He left without Secret Service, you know. Him and, him and Beth drove back to Missouri, was it?
Yeah, Independence.
In their own vehicle, you know, so. These are a little different times, but.
Yeah, they are. And you know, Harry had problems that were foisted on him.
Exactly.
Harry didn't choose. The business with the coal mines and the railroads, he chose. But he didn't, and then there was Korea. But even Korea was well received at the time. People hated Harry, among other things, for firing Douglas MacArthur, who had no more regard for American principles of representative democracy than George Bush does.
Right. Now, I don't have a big problem with that action, but I think it's going to be some very, very interesting times, and I look forward to them, you know. And it was even as bad as it was, it wasn't so bad watching that, knowing that this is it. He's done. He's not going to do it anymore. And, you know, just go away, man. Just go away. No.
Yeah, well, even his approval rating jumped a few points just because people are...
That kind of disgusts me. He's all the way up to 34%.
Yeah, but that is nothing more, Wayne, than people saying, okay, if we like you a little better, will you leave a little faster?
Will you go away quicker?
Will you?
That's exactly what it is.
But you know what? There's a relief in not having to watch him do this anymore after tonight. But I think I get a new story or three or four every day, Wayne, of one more thumb in the eye. I just got one a few minutes ago from our pal Cindy out in Washington State, and lo and behold, those dirty so-and-sos have at the last moment approved a liquid natural gas terminal that has been fought by everybody within 1,000 miles of it because it's a great big terror magnet. And the Bush administration said, it's approved.
Okay.
You know, like today.
Yeah. They're amazing people.
Yeah, maybe we need a new law, Democrat or Republican, to clarify some of the stuff that was that a previous Congress had tried to put in effect. That, you know, when you're a president and you're down to your last, 3 months in office, 6 months in office, no new executive orders without profound extenuating circumstances.
Exactly.
Anything pending decision within the administrative arm of government, anything pending decision within those 6 months waits for the new guy.
Yeah, it has to be carried over. You know, get it all ready, and we'll see if the new guy will approve it. Exactly. But we shall see, my good man.
Yes, we shall. And you know what? I really, the air does smell a little sweeter with the knowledge that because I ran the calculator a few minutes ago, Wayne. 2,920 days is how long we have been forced by the Supreme Court of the United States to put up with this ignorant little man.
Yep.
And we are down to just a few days short of that, and we don't got to do it no more.
Well, it'll be, a lot of people, including me, wondered if it would ever happen. You know, if they wouldn't find some way to declare martial law or to, you know, figure out some way to keep them in here, but it looks like they're not going to do that, so... I'm looking forward to the last bye-bye. And, you know, you probably saw today, too, I think it would be very appropriate for Marine One to pick him up off of the roof of the White House and take his ass back.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty similar to that. So, anyway, I'll let you get to your next caller.
All right. Take care, boss.
All right, man. Have a good evening.
Okay. Later.
All right. Bye.
That's Boss Man. That's Wayne. And yet you gotta, I know, we've called some things into some early decisions into question, and I've done it. But at the end of the day, you gotta have a little bit of optimism about what's coming. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. A little bit of optimism and But I have to agree with the earlier caller, the Alex Gray painting's a little creepy.
Yeah, on how many different levels? I mean, I understand the impetus, and I saw the one of the Dalai Lama down there, too.
Okay.
But, yeah, it is.
But he does do good work, and, you know, different strokes for different folks on that stuff, so I'm sure other people will enjoy it. Thanks for connecting me with Guy James on Facebook.
Oh, my pleasure.
He's a friend of mine now. And you said you're going to be in D.C. and you're going to get a chance to meet him while you're at a media conference.
What's happening is the Senate is hosting a progressive media summit. Or the Progressive Caucus of the Senate is hosting a progressive media summit on Wednesday. So I'm going to fly in on Tuesday afternoon and hook up with Guy, and then on Wednesday morning we go all day, and it ends with an hour and a half long Senate reception. And apparently there's going to be lots of progressive media types there. So I'm looking forward not just to meeting some luminaries, but to meeting some other people who are doing great work alongside what we're doing. And I'll be honest, I have an agenda, Preston. I'm gonna be shaking hands and hi, damn glad to meet you. How are you? Have you heard about mountaintop removal? What do you know about it? What can I tell you about it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I see that as a part of my function.
And also
touting the idea of us to a certain extent. Being very realistic about the for-profit media. And I don't know who's going to be there, but I hope I get to meet some of the people that I admire. And if I do, I'm going to thank them for their work.
Yeah, yeah. And make sure they get to know the Head-On Radio Network for sure. Well,
precisely. Exactly.
I've actually been contacting other people on kind of like progressive groups on Facebook, and just
I saw that, and that's that. You know, you've taken to Facebook like a duck to water, and I'm just proud to see it.
It's been fun. I signed up months ago, and I kind of forgot about it, and was occupied with other stuff. But I've really been enjoying this. It was kind of my New Year's resolution, and I'm so glad I've done it, and I've connected with people not just here but in other countries. This wonderful lady in Iran, who's letting me know about her country, and this guy in Zambia, actually, who organized that country's first documentary film festival a couple of years ago, and I've got lots of DVDs to share with him, and he needs all he can get his hands on. He's planning another one and would like to get some into the libraries in Zambia.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so a lot of fun connections.
God, I love watching grassroots activism happen. I just love it.
Yeah, it's good. You know, politics doesn't have to be drudgery and a drag all the time. You know, it can be hard work and stuff, but a lot of times it's a joy.
Yeah, that's not me being, it's all about me, but we're trying to get pretty proactive here. In the coming months, I'm not going to be broadcasting Wednesday that I know of. I'll be back on Thursday. But this thing in D.C., I will arrive home Thursday. On Friday, I'll go about an hour up the road, and Flying Spaghetti Monster will, and we will broadcast the proceedings of a meeting of the Progressive Democrats of West Virginia on Saturday. And then we will be, and it's confirmed, we're going to be at the Blue-Green Alliance Green Jobs Conference in D.C. from the 4th to the 6th of February.
Mm-hmm.
In March, I'm going to be taking part in what is called Lobby Week in D.C. Regarding mountaintop removal, and I'm going to do my best to broadcast from there. If things work out, David Silverman was on the show earlier this week, and I hope to be at the American Atheists meeting in April, because there's a lot of great, they do such great First Amendment work. And it goes forward from there. And I hope that, you know, I hope that we can pull this off because, you know, it's not necessarily about me going out and saying, look at me. It's more about taking what we can do somewhere and saying, let's hear about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we do need to kind of look at ourselves and talk about what we are doing ourselves. I mean, so often we're kind of focused on, you know, George Bush and Cheney and you know, what Hannity's doing. And, you know, certainly they deserve our attention and our critiques. But, you know, to focus just on them, you know, we kind of disempower ourselves or overlook our own initiatives. And we really need to not do that. I also wanted to mention, pick up on a thread Sandra started. I was so glad she mentioned the president of the General Assembly, you know, a figure, really interesting guy, by the way. He's someone I much would have preferred listening to him talk than a farewell speech from George Bush. His name's, I think, Manuel or Miguel Díaz-Coto, and he was ordained as a priest at Mary Knoll. And I don't know if you're familiar with Mary Knoll missionaries at all.
I am.
Yeah, I mean, they're a better version of organized religion, you know, and, you know, they've been involved with Central American liberation theology movements. They've really stuck their necks out and done a lot of good work for a long time in Brazil as well. And so that's where he kind of, you know, where he got his, where he entered the priesthood, and now he's serving as the General Assembly president. And for a long time, about a month ago, he suggested that the world start boycotting Israel because of this apartheid system they've got going. And he started to get death threats right away when he said that. And, you know, George Bush kept snubbing him at meetings. And Díaz-Coto was saying that, you know, he's the only world leader that hasn't, you know, come and said hello to me, but I still love him. And
he's a better man than I am by a long shot.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't find his most current remarks, but I did find some, you know, information about this, his earlier remarks about boycotting Israel. And, you know, it's so much not Israel, too. I mean, Israel is really being used as a tool, you know, by the empire, not just as a conduit for weapons sales to Israel directly, but, you know, when activists stopped the U.S. from being able to sell weapons to Guatemala because there were so many huge human rights abuses going on, then they just used Israel as the new vehicle.
As the pass-through.
That's right.
The middleman.
That's right. They've also been involved with training and arming the paramilitaries in Colombia that Obama knows about, and how they're killing labor leaders and a lot of...
Yeah, and you know that was the, and again I've remarked on how the Bush administration really is putting the fingers in our eyes. The idea of giving Uribe the Presidential Medal of Freedom over the 8 years that George Bush has been in office, that honor, and it is supposed to be a signal honor, has absolutely been tarnished almost beyond rehabilitation. Oh, so you won the Presidential Medal of Freedom, did you? Yeah. And you can see this, you know, going into the future with the Obama administration. Yeah, I work to save a lot of starving people. That's well, that's great. So you share that honor with Colombian President Uribe, who backed death squads.
Right.
Well, like, I guess I got to give back the Medal of Freedom now.
Right. It was like how the Nobel Peace Prize lost a lot of luster when they gave it to Kissinger.
Yeah.
But.
And I think they're still getting over that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when Henry Kissinger gets a Nobel Peace Prize, that means they're pretty much in gumball machines.
That's true. They've had some good recipients, though, the past couple of years. I liked the Jimmy Carter one. It was a good one.
Yes. Well, as was Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yeah, and Shirin Ebadi of Iran and Wangari Maathai of Africa. And then on the economic prize.
And don't forget Al Gore.
When, yeah, that's true. Also, yeah. in the economic end, instead of Milton Friedman, we had Paul Krugman this year. So, you know, they're getting better. And on the UN, there's something before I let you go. I know you're running late, want to get home, but there's something in the argument about Israel and Hamas that's, there's a rhetorical game being played regarding, you know, in Hamas charter, they won't recognize the legitimacy of Israel. And what's going on there is sort of a, people are being deceived, because it's common for states not to recognize other states. Like Mexico doesn't recognize the U.S. in its current borders. They recognize its existence, but they won't recognize its legitimacy. The United States does not recognize the Soviet Union when it was still in existence for a long time. There are all kinds of kind of legal battles and international law going on. That does not mean that Mexico wants to commit genocide against the U.S. or anything like that. And vice, and similarly with Hamas, not real relevant.
Well, it's what you called it. It is a rhetorical device. Yeah. Or I guess what would be referred to in legal terms as a term of art, or perhaps the absence of a term of art.
That's right. And I want to mention real quick where I learned that from. It was a classic debate between Noam Chomsky and Richard Perle. And the Perle is P-E-R-L-E.
L-E, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy who now says that he was not the architect of the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the architect of the Iraq War?
Right,
yeah.
Right. But isn't he been called the Prince of Darkness or something? You know, he's one of the power elite for sure, pulling the strings on this stuff. And to see how Noam Chomsky just tore him apart in this debate, it was from 1988 at Ohio State University. And, you know, there are transcripts and, you know, copies of it on the web. And I'd certainly recommend it here.
Was it like watching Muhammad Ali fight Bozo?
yeah, it was like that. It was like that. You bet.
And I make a little joke, but one wonders, Preston, you know, you mentioned Richard Perle, but there is, you know, there's a whole rogues gallery of these people. There's Richard Perle, there's Paul Wolfowitz. What happens to these merchants of death when Barack Obama comes in? Is it like Sauron fleeing to Mirkwood and licking his wounds as the necromancer until he can re-inhabit Mordor? Do they just wait for the next opportunity to resharpen their fangs on the rest of the world? And I ask that because I remember how the Project for a New American Century creepies authored that letter to Bill Clinton. And, you know, come on, attack Iraq. Attack Iraq. Ah, oh, come on, please, won't you attack Iraq?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they were out there beating that drum the whole time. And you know, I'm already seeing it because I get emails from right-wing media outfits. For instance, the campaign that has already been ginned up and drummed up against the Employee Free Choice Act, and they've found their meme, and they are pulling it like a little red wagon. Well, Democrats want to take away a working man's right to a secret ballot, and see that works on such a sleazy level. What? A secret ballot? You mean if I'm a working man, I don't get to go vote in secret no more? Not even for president?
Yep.
And it's like what Malloy pointed out last night, and this is the genius of Malloy, that when Charlie Gibson did his 19 seconds about the slaughter in Gaza, the story that butted up against that was the new Bin Laden tape. And this,
right.
and it really is. Who was the guy who said perception is reality? Was that Alvin Toffler, maybe? But there's so much truth in that, because you know, blah, 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 Gaza, blah, blah, blah. By the way, 300 of them were children, blah, 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 blah. Osama bin Laden, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, to this extent, they perception is reality. You know, I mean, actually, there's a right-wing host here who always says that, and I guess he's just citing Toffler or whoever. Reality is reality, but certainly, you know, how we perceive it can affect it. And, you know, there's all these perception management campaigns going on. And, you know, I don't know where these people will go with Obama coming in. I mean, they'll work campaigns because, you know, while he's in office, they'll try to, you know, work.
And the reason I raised that issue, Preston, is because it goes back to a theme that has been raised on this program, and I know Guy James has raised it as well, that side understands the idea of ideological sustenance. So that while Richard Perl and Paul Wolfowitz are off in the wilderness, it's going to be a wilderness that has 8-course meals in it, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will be supported, and they will be nurtured, they will be cosseted and mollycoddled. You know, no, you're really not an insane, evil monster. You're just misunderstood, and we'll understand you better next time. Because you've seen that in the talking points that are already out there from the right, that, conservatism really is going to be the salvation of America. If we can just get the one who really is conservative, because, you know, George wasn't.
Right.
And so it's an infrastructure thing, I guess. But, you know, we try to do a little bit of that, empowering people to talk about issues, and you know, we've developed shows by people who've never done shows before, and I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of Billy Shears with Night Sounds, and so proud of Rick Goodner and Rick's Place on the weekends. John Fox, and he'll probably laugh when I tell this. I remember the night that he had to go live the first time. And I'm sitting there in production chat typing, John, come on, breathe, buddy, breathe. Because it was like radio auctioneer house, and it was wonderful. Because John liked to do everything pre-recorded and go back and fix everything and make sure it's sonically perfect. Because John does sonically perfect. I mean, he just does. And so, you know, and now if you tune in on Sunday nights at 9 p.m., John sounds like an old pro because he is.
Mm-hmm.
And getting that idea of nurturing liberal or progressive media, no matter what it be, whether it be a blog, whether it be radio, whether it be video. And, you know, I hope to goodness, I know the agenda for this thing on Wednesday is things like labor and health care. But I hope at some point in time that we have a real conversation about the work that's being done by the people who showed up. And I hope somewhere along the way somebody can say, listen, guys, we appreciate the summit and everything, but we need you to understand we're not like the right wing. I'm sure everybody here would like to have just a cadre of yes men and yes women and bootlicks and lickspittles, but we're liberals. We're progressives. And we have a conscience where the Hannitys and the Limbaughs don't. So please understand that it's nothing personal if we criticize something you've done or call into question a policy decision. We're still on your side, and we want to help you be better at what you're doing. Not for us, not for you, but for America. And I hope we can have that conversation, because it is so vitally important, Preston. And, you know, you're plugged in and you're tuned in and you read liberal media, you read progressive thought, you listen to it, you watch it, you pay attention to it. And you yourself prove what a tool it can be. And we need across the board to acknowledge what a wonderful transformative thing it can be, if only we get past ideas of folks having the right pedigree to be supported. This is not a pitch. I'm talking about other people too.
Mm-hmm.
But get past the idea that, well, you know, I don't think we can give them a grad yet. Hey, I've got this buddy that I went to Yale with, and he's got a startup over here, and he needs money. That stuff has got to end if we are ever going to have a meaningful alternative to the right wing filth machine.
Yeah, and so many people need to overcome, you know, what makes them hesitate to engage. You know, I have friends who won't get on Facebook because they're concerned about who might see their profile, maybe an employer or a potential employer. Or, you know, maybe it's being monitored by, you know, someone with some security agency.
Well, you know, the first rule of Facebook and MySpace is to understand that everybody there is 14 years old, even if they're 100, because it's the operative paradigm. It's the design theory that went into it to create functionalities within it that are best comprehended by the people who are adopters of new technology, and that's a much younger demographic than what I am. I'm trying to catch up, and I still haven't figured out Twitter, which is supposed to be the simplest social network out there. Okay. But everybody's 14 years old, and rule two: if you're naked, don't put it on Facebook. Rule three, if this applies to blogs, or because, you know, there was a guy at CNN lost his job over it. You know, you're not on the clock when you type in this stuff, but if they can go to it and see it on the internet, it's already been upheld that it's okay to can you for what you say. So there's an implied censorship to it, and I find that to be the most revolting aspect of it.
Yeah, and taking place here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? Yeah, it's remarkable how many people are hesitant because of, you know, potential job implications. But, you know, if you can get away with it and you can post something, of, you know, a naked picture of yourself, I mean, if you feel at liberty to do that, that would be great, or whatever. Maybe do some, you know, who knows, legalized pot advocacy or whatever. You know, some people are in positions where they don't have to worry about what their employer may see.
Right, and all of this really is culturally transformative and culturally challenging. Our youngest blogger, Freckles Cassie, who is at FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com, just recently had a blog post in which she did this little triptych of three kids' stories. One of them was about the young woman selling her virginity, auctioning off her virginity. But the other was a story about cops in I forget where, Preston, who have gone and rounded up and charged with child pornography teenagers who were emailing each other naked photos of themselves.
Mm.
And that's, again, land of the brave. Home of the free.
Yeah, and it has a chilling effect on a lot of people.
Yeah, it does.
But we can't, you know, we really can't cause it ourselves. I mean, the gay rights movement, I think, has taught us a lot about how, you know, there are risks involved, but there are bigger risks in staying in the closet, and it's absolutely essential that we come out as, whether we're gay or environmentalists or we're, you know, foreign policy critics, we just have to speak out. It's the, you know, that's how, you know, mind is the forerunner of all things, the Buddhists say. And if we're not speaking our minds freely, those who are with these massive platforms, they're going to lead us in a different direction, an ugly one. So, and actually another, alternative voice, and do you know Global Pundit by chance?
I recognize it, but I can't place it.
I'll get back with you on that one. I just wanted to say hello and thanks again for connecting me with Guy on Facebook. And
you've connected with Ange, I think, our pal, yeah. Frank and Angel.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of it. It literally is personal networking, and done right, it's just wonderful.
Ange is in Fayetteville, and I actually found another person who's a friend. friend of your show who's also in Fayetteville.
Cool. Horn listening party.
And they actually didn't know each other, so, but they're Facebook friends now. So
that's awesome.
People are having fun with it.
Well, Preston, it's been a wonderful conversation as usual. I thank you very much, and have yourself a wonderful evening.
Likewise, Bob. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Preston calling from Denver. Wow, what a wonderful show you guys made tonight. I promised a real live, genuine, honest to goodness kicker before we left tonight. See, you thought I forgot, didn't you? Yeah, 3.5 hours, no short term memory whatsoever has Bob. Yes, he does. Innocuous headline. And I have David in Tennessee to thank for this. Innocuous headline. Dum dum. Police. Ohio man ran hooker review website. Subheading. Ex-head of faith agency is accused of trading online info on prostitutes. Dum dum. It only gets better, kids. Columbus police arrested a man they say was responsible for a website where customers could post reviews of prostitutes. You know, online reviews are really the next wave. In fact, there are companies whose sole function in life is to provide review engines for companies. Like if you go to, say, Sears.com and you just love that new snowblower, and you want to let everybody know, you can review the snowblower. And that functionality within that website is a separate animal that's provided by a company that's right. So online reviews are big. And why not review hookers? I mean, why not? So what was going on here is the guy had a website, and the fine folks at the Associated Press don't tell us what that website was, which is probably just as well. Because the guy who got busted for the website in which customers posted reviews of various prostitutes in the community included a review of a 17-year-old girl. Little dicey. Lot dicey. Police authorities also say that the man helped organize a $10 a ticket raffle. Yeah, really. $10 a ticket raffle that offered an evening with a prostitute. No information here on how much he raised. But remember that. Raffle. Guy's 46 years old, and he got busted yesterday. And he's got a bunch of charges ahead of him, one of which is compelling prostitution involving a minor. Because of the 17-year-old. Who is this guy? What did I say? Raffle. Who does raffles? I mean, come on, at least around here in West Virginia, some church always has a raffle going, right? The man in question is Robert Eric McFadden. And he traded information about online escorts and hookers who work the streets. Again, like I said, Robert Eric McFadden is 46 years old. So what? So what? So what? So this. You got to go all the way to the bottom of the AP story. I mean, you wouldn't want to lead with this or anything. I mean, not that it's important. You know, you put the important stuff at the front of the journalism piece. Last paragraph. McFadden formerly served as director of the Faith-Based and Community Initiatives Office under Governor Ted Strickland. He was transferred to a job with the State Prisons Department in 2007 and laid off in March 2008 due to budget cuts. But, you know, you try to use your work experience to further your career, learn a little something else along the way. I mean, among other, when we started this radio network in, there was a lot of tech work that went in front of even getting it going. We went on the air October 24th, 2005 in this current incarnation. But before that, there were computers to be brought in and furniture to be set up and the equipment had to be set up. And I remember getting a computer that was going to be one of the two original computers that worked in here. And I had to install a sound card. And okay, I'm a former English major, all right? And when I was an English major in college, back when I rode my dinosaur to class, English majors were not allowed to touch computers. Really. I mean, you could, the resources were so narrow that you couldn't, if you were an English major or anything but a computer science major, you were not allowed to touch the computers or take the computer classes. Not kidding. So the insides of a computer were something that were absolutely mystifying to me. Way outside my pay grade. But I remember that first time that I pulled the side panel off of the computer and successfully installed the sound card. I was amazed. I didn't break anything. I didn't hurt myself. And since then, in the 3.5 years that have passed since we went on the air on October 24th, 2005, I've learned things I never dreamed I would want to know or need to know. Thanks to the brilliant man that is Peter Godbold, I've built computers now. Every computer running in this studio right now was built from scratch, so to speak, by me with his help. And it amazes me. And I use words I never used before. So you try to take things and benefit from them as you learn. So, you know, you're the faith-based and community initiatives director under Ohio Governor Ted Strickland. And being a churchy kind of guy, you take that knowledge and you couple it with your state prisons department job, where you've probably come into contact with issues regarding arrested hookers. And the next thing you know, bam! You've got a hooker review website and a raffle for a hooker. You can't make this stuff up. When asked why he did it, Robert Eric McFadden said, "Well, Jesus ran around with hookers all the time. I'm just trying to be a little bit more like Christ." Nah, he didn't say that. I said that. But you can certainly imagine that happening. So, you know what? Honest to God, I got enough stuff here to do 2 more hours, but I'm not gonna. It's time to wrap up. Need to get over to Malloy. I do, you do, we do. I hate impinging on his time. But at any rate, thank you everyone for making a wonderful evening. I don't think you can ever know what I get from your comments, from your emails, phone calls, your chat, your postings in the forum, your thoughts in the blog, your notes on Facebook and MySpace. It is just mind-bending to me, and it's wonderful. So we'll be back, I hope all of you and I, tomorrow evening. I'll be the only live programming on the horn tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I hope you'll join me for a rollicking Friday night edition of the program. And I want to thank everybody, like I said, who participates. I want to thank also the folks who keep this going. Your contributions make Conversation Radio possible. Your contributions make it possible for us to grow and go and do things and expand not only the reach of this network, but the reach of your voice, not just mine or John's or Guy's or Rick Goodner's or Rick Smith's or Billy Shears. You expand the reach of your voice and your thoughts. If you have not contributed and you are able to do so, there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. And if you care to get friendly with it, it'll help keep things going here. If you'd like to do snail mail instead, you can do that to Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, that stands for Personal Mailbox, 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. The horn also happens because of the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, the bravest, hardest working people that I know. CRMW.net and ColeRiverWind.org. And they will be on my mind as I meet some of those folks in D.C. on Wednesday. I tell everybody everywhere I know about what's going on here. And I know that you tell people, too. And for that, we are grateful. Because we're all learning, slowly but surely, that we are all downstream and we are all downwind. And that makes it all the more likely that we will win this thing. Thanks to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to the most overworked man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.